Blog Talk Radio.
Nowhere near us.
do, I do. I'm young right now, but I won't be forever. Wanna live it up like that's true. You might wanna roll with me too, but I don't mean to brag. But I live a life that most can only dream about, yeah. So baby, come be my dream girl. Pick up fantasy and let me work out, yeah. Oh yeah. Tell me where you wanna go, what you wanna do. Say we living it like we own it, own it, own it. To the most top of the world, what I need is you. Say we living it like we own it, own it, own it, yeah. Never too much, so just let the drink flow. Later on you can come through, through, come through. You know you're the prize. They should call you your highness. They call me king cause I'm that dude. All you gotta do is leave your crew. But I don't need a brag. But I live a life that most can only dream about, yeah. So baby, come be my dream girl. Pick up fantasy and let me work out, yeah. Oh yeah. Tell me where you wanna go, what you wanna do. Say we living it like we own it, own it, own it. To the most top of the world, what I need is you. Say we living it like we own it, own it, own it, yeah.
For a reason, seeds born, elders die, all things in season. These days I'm just trying to get in where I squeezing. Scratch that, I bust the game open till it's bleeding. That's that, D-Don Kimasi, Mau Mau Posse. Guerrilla warfare, no man will ever stop me. Cause I run with tall black skin, Anunnaki. With 4 pounds of silver plated chrome in their pockets. But most days I am non-violent. Just don't cut my wrist and I remain silent. And when I speak, my truth weighs a ton. The scales tip as bricks of gold fall off my tongue. Your bars become stiff and cold as you succumb to the spit I hold between my molars for fun. Yeah, in all fairness, I get it from my daddy. MLK, baby, raised up on the avid. Offspring of ghetto life, crumbling brick and tragedy. They say that we have it good, I say that they imagining. I came from Ward 8, but soldiers stayed in war state. Anger seeped through jagged teeth cause they couldn't get a warm plate. I made it out with a number 2 in the clean slate. A dirty conscience haunts me when I shouldn't even be awake. Cause I was born in the 80s just like my friends was. But now I'm getting texts about this from my overdose. And not that he was my closest friend, but I hold him close. He lived across the street in apartment B where they sold the dope. And yes, I'm going on a tangent. My mind is running rampant and writing is the only way I handle it. The booth is like my cell therapy, ass goodie. My words like food for the soul, let go of the past with them. And past cathartic, this is life saving for me. 14 years old, sliced and arms, but life gave upon me. But I had cake and rest and De La Soul and brand new to say that hip-hop show me God is nothing short of purest truth. Sure, I do this to prove a point to my critics. Lyrics like fire bullets, they're seeking targets to finish. My limits have been crossed. Now I made a of my business. The personally mask of these rappers who pack shit with a ribbon. Presented to children who don't know how to tell the difference between a lie and authentic or being alive and just living. I'm here to tell you my vision with IMAX precision. My storyline is still building, the climax impending. But I am the protagonist, but I come out winning. The top is a long way from my start and humble beginners. Finna get it like a champion, going after the pennant. Like mortgage pirates who siphon and red gold off of your pendant. Swinging the pendulum, trying to send it back to the middle. When it's settled, I'm telling you, I'm a master, the rhythm, 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 rhythm.
Me without a mic is like a bee without a snare. Don't you even go there. Tear into your ego. Freestyle with no rehearsal. Me without a mic is like a bee without a snare. Don't you even go there. Tear into your ego. Freestyle with no rehearsal. Don't you even go there.
Peace. Welcome to High Frequency Radio Network. Today is Tuesday, January the 28th, 2014. You are on the Tuesday show, Brother Sharif, which is the Debt Show. Thank everybody for tuning in today. And for those of you that are going to tune in later, call in numbers 424-222-5250, 424-222-5250. Press 1 once you call in to have a question answered or concern addressed. We got an interesting show today. I'm going to be joined by a couple of guests later on within the next hour. We're going to discuss some important issues here today, and then we're going to go to the lines to address the community's issues. There is going to be several events I will address today, I will announce today, rather, for the family to have information on, and I'll address that here in the next 5 or 10 minutes. Again, the caller number is 424-222-5250. I apologize for the late start. Somehow, the time was set erroneously. I'll just say that. My show starts at 11. For some reason, it was set for 2, and I keep playing around with it, and TalkShoe seems to want to have my show at 2 o'clock. Maybe I should just do that. But since I'm kind of hard-headed, I'm not going to do that. I'm going to keep it at 11 because that's the requirements here. So the email address for High Frequency Radio Network for you to get on the mailing list for the network is High Frequency Radio Blog Talk at gmail.com. That's High Frequency Radio Blog Talk at gmail.com. To get on my email address is the Lawmaster, THELAWMASTER 44 at yahoo.com. The Lawmaster 44 at yahoo.com. Get on both of those email contact lists so you can receive any information regarding webinars, seminars, or information on our respective topics for all the hosts. You can get on the main email mailing list, which is High Frequency Radio Blog Talk at gmail.com. And you can get on my email address, my email mailing list, excuse me, to receive information regarding debt, foreclosure, things of that nature, or any upcoming events. Speaking of events, this Saturday, I will be hosting a webinar this Saturday, February the 1st. 10 o'clock in the morning, I'm sorry. I will be doing part 2 of the FCRA. For those of you that didn't attend the previous webinar, I do a stair-step process to where I show you how to execute and demonstrate certain remedies. I do it in order. I don't give you everything at once. Okay, so I partition that information intentionally so you're able to gain an understanding of the process to do things correctly. So this Saturday, part 2, FCRA, how to remove negative information from your credit and how to make money while doing so. All right? So those of you that was at part 1, you know that part 2 was forthcoming. It is here, February 1st, 10 a.m. Those of you on the mailing list will get information on how to participate and attend that webinar this Saturday. All right? I also want to give a shout-out, a heavy shout-out, to all my groups that are out there. So all of you that have taken the debt situation seriously, that has invested and afforded the time for you to learn the consumer protection laws, the laws that governs most contracts out there. I want to give a shout out to my New York group, who is doing a fantastic job executing and demonstrating. They are slowly but surely removing these debt restraints from themselves and turning those alleged debts into assets, meaning money. Give a shout out to my Indiana group, my Colorado group, my Nevada group, my California group, my Georgia group, and also, can't leave them out, my Washington group. Big shout outs and honor to you guys that have invested in your education, that is demonstrating, that is taking the webinars and the information that's deferred on the show and actually doing something with it, implementing it, using it to free yourself. There's nothing that gets me more excited than people taking their matters into their own hands and taking that information, coming together as a group, as a collective body, and executing and demonstrating that you do have a way to defend yourself from any type of debt. So I want to give a shout out to them. Collectively, those groups have reported that they have collected somewhere near in the range of $78,000 between all of them just in the last 6 weeks. Also, they have reported that they have eliminated a total of $267,000 in erroneous debt from either their credit reports or through settlements. So I'm proud of that information, those statistics. I implore everybody that is on this show to take the information seriously, because most of what we do out here today commercially is some sort of consumer transaction. And in many cases, these entities, debt collectors, even creditors, are waving money in your face, waving violations in your face, and hoping that you are not on this show or any other show that provides information about these violations. So take it seriously. I give honors to those who have taken it seriously and who have decided to make a living doing this, because it's out there. You can make a pretty good living dealing with these debt collectors, because they cannot almost always collect a debt without violating some aspect of the consumer protection laws. So I want to give honors to those who have been successful, those who are studying. I want to give a shout out to the queen who ordered her books, who took it seriously after I critiqued her on our community not taking this action to court until you are ready, until you have studied, you are educated, you have studied the rules. Last week, I gave those of you who are interested in taking things seriously a couple of books that you can order that will aid you in advancing any lawsuit against a debt collector. Those two books were O'Connor's Federal Rules, Civil Trial. You can get the 2012 or 2013 version. Also, O'Connor's Federal Civil Forms. You can get the 2012 or 2013 edition. Those two books in itself will help you tremendously in gaining an understanding of the consumer protection laws, how to plead, how to file motions. The O'Connor Civil Forms have just about every form that you will need. These are the same books that your legal society uses, okay? So if you, for those of you that like templates and downloading information from the internet and plugging your name in it, why don't you just go ahead and invest $100 or so in the O'Connor's O'Connor's Federal Civil Forms book. That way you can draft your own forms. You don't have to be asking someone, what do I do with a motion to dismiss? How do I file a motion for summary judgment? How do I file a motion for discovery? If you get those two books, I can assure you, and they're pretty thick, you go through and you read those books, you will have a pretty advanced understanding of how to execute and demonstrate a case under consumer protection law. So I advise everybody to invest a couple hundred dollars. It's information that you're going to retain from now until the end of time, because as we know, commerce is here to stay. So are consumer protection laws. All right, so I just wanted to put that information out there. The webinar is this Saturday. I already spoke about that. Contact me at thelawmaster44@yahoo.com to reserve your seating for this Saturday's webinar, okay? I'm going to take a quick break, come back, dive into the show, have some information to share regarding credit and regarding providing your private personal information, something I felt the community needs. It's a topic I'm going to spend a little bit of time on just to be able to have the community be equipped with what's going on in this information age. So I'm going to take a short break, 30 seconds or so, no more than a minute. We're going to come right back. Peace.
Yeah. Yeah. Go.
You know very well who you are. You're the only one. You've got my heart.
Frequency Radio. We're going to dive into the show. I'm going to talk about a couple of things that I thought may be necessary to share with the community. And I always try to bring personal experiences or information that I come across during my course of living. Within the last month or so, there's been several major breaches of information. Those of you may be aware of it. One is the Target store breach of data that was manifested a couple of weeks ago, whereby 40 million or so consumers, credit card, debit card, personal identifying information was illegally obtained. Now, they allege that the group that is facilitating these breaches are Russian or Chinese hackers, okay, that are obtaining this information. They sell that information, which includes many times your complete credit card information, debit card information, PIN number information, email address, and of course attached to those credit cards and debit cards, one would think that your personal identifying information, social security number, address, and things of that nature would also be obtained by a hacker. We are in the information age, and we have to, I know we speak a lot on this show about dealing with your credit report, debt collectors, and things of that nature, so I thought the topic is relevant for me to go into some ways that you need to protect your information. We are in an age and been in an age where technology is fastly growing and the laws are not catching up to the abilities of technology. And I don't know of anywhere that you go today where some entity is not requesting your social security number, your date of birth, and any other proprietary information. Many times these entities and agencies that are requesting this information from you is not entitled to it, okay? But we're just in the habit of disclosing that information just because it is requested. When you get into reading the law, you will understand that trickery is often used, and many times you will have to translate the trickery into reality, okay? One is that most lending institutions or banks will many times tell you that we are required that information, okay? Now, to the average Joe Blow, that sounds like you have to give that information. But someone that is able to translate that, it says clearly they're required to request it. It's no requirement for me to provide it to you. Okay, and that's where myself and other hosts on the show tries to translate this legalese, these languages, to make sure that the community is aware of their requirement. All right? There are agencies and companies out there, most of which we talk about, Equifax, TransUnion, Experian, and other companies that make a good living off of selling your personal information. And they obtain this personal information by various means, most of which comes from you, yourself, the consumer. You not knowing that you are not required to provide that information, and you shouldn't require that, you shouldn't provide that information to anyone. Okay? We have to understand that when we go to doctor's offices, they always have a form and require you to fill out your name, your address, your telephone number, your email address, your bank account information many times, your social security number, your maiden name, and all that. You have to understand that you have to start to be very, very protective of this information, as well as the companies. Target is facing a class action lawsuit because they did not do enough to protect the financial information of their consumers. All right? Neiman Marcus is another one that had a data breach. Coca-Cola had a data breach. When you go in these particular entities, whether it's the hospital, whether it's a dentist, whether it's any other entity, you have to understand that the people sitting behind those desks are low-level employees. No disrespect to them, okay? I'm not knocking the job. What I'm saying is that you have to be mindful of who you're giving information to. I don't think any of you that have kids, a 4 or 5 or 6-year-old, would give them a $1,000 check. nor would you give them your birth certificates or Social Security card to take to school. They may lose it. That's very important and sensitive information. Okay. Nor should you be given a low-level employee or entity that doesn't need that information, your Social Security number, your date of birth. Okay? I've always been of the belief that these days everybody wants to do a credit check on you. For you to get utilities, they want a credit check. For you to get cable, they want a credit check. It's just become ridiculous. Okay, because all of these particular agencies that you apply for services with now have a copy of your credit report, and you don't know how they store that information, you don't know how they secure that information, and I'm just telling you right now, it's getting to a point to where you can deny just about anything that's out there, because the erroneous information being stored in the public and the information that is being stolen in this country is just making for a bad situation as far as the accuracy of information. Okay, it's just becoming terrible, all right? We are coming to a point where I always advise people that you should get yourself a disposable debit card, okay, a gift card, all right, and use that gift card to make most of the purchases that you can. You need to keep your bank account debit card and your credit cards at home in your wallet, because once you give it to that waiter or waitress, you don't know whether they're making a copy of that debit card or credit card, and trust me, it happens more often than you think. You don't know if they're copying all the information off the front and the back of that card and using it later, okay? There's so many ways that we violate our own selves with freely offering this information that we have to be accountable for what we do and what we don't do. Okay? There are laws against a company demanding that you provide a Social Security number. Okay? They can request it, but they can't demand that you give it to them. In certain instances, they can't deny you certain services. That's with regards to banking institutions, government institutions, things like that. They can't deny you service if you fail to provide a Social Security number. We have to be more protective of this information. We even have to be protective of our telephone numbers, because our telephone numbers provide a history of who we talk to, what we search on the Internet, what we're talking about, text messages. We heard of the NSA situation, all right? So for you queens that are out there, all right, I know of cases where a stalker obtained the telephone number that was given. Maybe you met a guy in a club, gave him the phone number, and the guy was able to pull a phone records. I mean, we have to understand that this information is in the hands of somebody, Facebook, all these other social. They sell information to third parties, okay? I'm going to share with you an experience I had a couple of weeks ago. Broke one of my cell phones, had insurance on the particular phone, called in to make my insurance claim to have the phone replaced. I called the carrier, cell phone carrier, spoke to them. They forwarded me to the insurance department. The insurance department said, okay, we'll go through and process your claim for the phone, but they said we have to get some information from you. So what information is that? Well, we have to verify some information through public records. I said, well, you kind of got the right guy. What public records? It's all just public information, public records that we have here, and we need you to verify whether that information is true. So I says, well, unless you can tell me where the information derives, I'm not sure that I'm going to answer any of those questions. When you say public information, I don't have any responsibility. There's a lot of erroneous information out there, and I don't think it's my job to correct or deny that information that you provide. But you can take a shot and go ahead. So the gentleman began to ask a bunch of questions. Now, this was a corporate account, so it's just formality for these places to ask these questions. And I said, so what is this information going to be pertaining to? He says, it's to you. It's consumer information based on you. And I said, wow, Well, that's going to be interesting because I knew the account was in a corporate name. So he didn't have any identifying information on me, and I'll discuss that a little bit more later. So the gentleman began to ask, did you ever live here? Did you ever live there? Did you ever, what's your mother's maiden name? What's your daddy's this? You know, did you ever have a dog over here? Did you ever work for so-and-so? And he asked those questions. And I said, keep going. I didn't answer any of them. I said, ask me all the questions they're going to answer. So I listened to about six questions. And he says, and I said, now I'm going to ask you again, where do you get this information from? And he says, public records. I don't know exactly the source. I said, until you can tell me the source, I'm not going to answer those questions. Because first of all, those questions are confidential. They're proprietary. Okay? They're private. And I don't have a reason in the world to give you that information. You're an insurance company. You have been receiving insurance premiums on insuring the phone, the cell phone, for any type of damage or loss. Okay? And you provide this information to the cell phone carrier. Now, initially, when I got the insurance information, you didn't request this information. So I'm not going to be crazy enough to correct or not correct the erroneous information you may have in a public record, the source which you are able to identify to me. So I don't know where you're getting this information from. Okay, I'm not going to say yay or nay, but, you know, I want to move on and go ahead and process my claim for the cell phone. And he says, well, I can't do that until the information is provided. And I said, well, why do you need this information? And the gentleman said, and this was his answer, he says, it's for your safety and protection. I think he said that to the wrong person. I said, sir, let me make something clear to you. I don't need any third party, insurance company, government agency, law enforcement agency, legal society member, or anybody else to protect my safety and security. I'm the one empowered to do that, okay? And my job is to protect my safety from entities like you that want to gather information or confirm information or validate information so you can put it in your database and sell it. I just have no desire to do that. Legally, I'm not required to do that. And if you request that information of me again, I'm going to take action, appropriate action against you for even trying to make it appear that I have to provide you with that information because I don't. So he escalated me to a supervisor. The supervisor asked me the same round of questions, and I said, ma'am, do you want to continue to demand information that I'm not willing to give you? It is not required. She says, well, it's a company policy. I said, ma'am, your company policy is adverse to law. All right? I don't have to provide you with that information. Are you denying me my service because I won't validate your erroneous information? You can't even tell me where you got the information from. Okay? So make a long story short, of course, she conceded by replacing my cell phone, which I knew she would. But I wanted to share that story because this is what others are being faced with today. You have to be careful with your private information. There are times where you may dispute things with the credit bureaus, okay? And Equifax, TransUnion, Experian are information gatherers. They gather information. They may request that you send them a copy of your driver's license. I always tell you not to do that. No third-party debt collector needs to have a physical copy of your driver's license, Social Security card, utility bill, or anything else, okay? When they ask you to do that, you need to tell them, basically, I have no requirement to provide you with that information. The information you're reporting is erroneous. You reported that information on your own. I'm telling you to correct it on your own. If you didn't need documentation from me to report that information, you don't need documentation from me to correct it. Okay, we have to get out of the habit of proving to these artificial entities that we are who we say we are, that we're doing what we say we're doing, that it is what we say it is. If you don't have any information, okay, that contradicts what I'm saying, my word is enough. You're a debt collector. You're an information reporting agency. You report what I say is accurate, and I don't have to prove it to you. Because if you report erroneous information, when I sue you, I will prove to you then that the information you reported is erroneous. We have to be careful giving out our personal information. I want to read to you an article about some agencies that are out there, some of which will be discussed in the webinar this weekend. All right? And the title of this article is Consumer Reporting Agencies Violate the Fair Credit Reporting Act, resulting in fines up to $1 billion. As the unemployment rate continually fluctuates, companies have become more dependent upon pre-employment background screening to assist in the selection process. With this being the quickest and easiest way to obtain invaluable information on a candidate, it is imperative that a consumer reporting agency provides an employer with an accurate and up-to-date information. For the past 40-plus years, the Fair Credit Reporting Act has policed the information, which is and is not reportable in a consumer report. Okay? The unfortunate fact is that many CRAs are not, and CRAs mean credit reporting agencies, are not following the FCRA to the best of their ability, and in turn are providing inaccurate and or unreportable information to an employer. So as I explained to you in the last shows, this information that's contained in your credit report is important because it's now used, in my opinion, as a way to discriminate against certain people, meaning for even in auto insurance, they use your credit report. How credit has anything to do with your driving ability is beyond me. But they're using this information to ascertain your interest rate for a loan, of course, and then we can understand that. Okay, and they're even using that to determine whether you have a deposit for utilities. I don't understand that. And it's also being used for an employer to gauge whether they want to hire you or not, which I don't understand how that has any relevance. Okay? Let me finish with the article. In the past few years, the Federal Trade Commission, which is the FTC, and the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, and I told you about them, they're the new debt collector police, all right, have tightened the leash on the human capital management industry, uncovering many mistakes that are being made by some of the biggest players. Within the past year alone, we have seen General Information Services, GIS, you'll hear that name a lot, LexisNexis, you will hear that name a lot because LexisNexis is one of the agencies that will report information to the credit bureaus. They gather that information from public records, from county courthouses, things of that nature, and they sell that information to the credit bureaus. Okay? The next company is HireRight, which is H-I-R-R-I-G-H-T, and Sterling Information Info Systems, being brought forward on allegations of misreporting information and or violations of the FCRA. The first offender, GIS, which is General Information Services, is being scrutinized for many issues, including providing inaccurate and not up-to-date information to the U.S. Postal Service. So you see what I say by these? They sell third-party information based on you calling maybe and getting a cell phone replaced and they're asking you to verify, you know, public information that may be erroneously and most times is. All right. They sell this information to the Postal Service to make sure the post office has an up-to-date address on you or where you're living, okay? As well as consumer organizations including Walmart and Aaron's Rents, okay? So they provide information to all these different agencies. Okay? I'll say it again. They're making money off of your name, your intellectual property, your name. Particularly, one case brought forth to the United States District Court for the Eastern District of Pennsylvania proved that by including information found through a simple database search without verifying the accuracy of adverse information before release, GIS, which is General Information Services, caused candidates to be removed from the candidate pool with false reporting of said candidate's criminal history. Okay? So they're also responsible for providing information on your criminal history, which you have a lot of these databases and companies out there that will allow you to do a background check or allow you to, okay? This information is all public record, and we know a lot of that information, some information you'll find on a court website is erroneous. Okay? So this information has not been vetted. It's not accurate. It's not verified. It's just information that can cause you damages by an employer taking the word of these particular companies like LexisNexis, General Information Services, and saying we're not going to hire you, or we're not going to give you an apartment, or we're not going to give you a house, or we're not going to give you credit because of this information that is out there that is most of the time contradicting, ambiguous, confusing, and erroneous. Okay? So GIS caused candidates to be removed from the candidate pool with false reporting and said candidate of said candidate's criminal history. In addition to the aforementioned, GIS, well known for their government contract, okay, so GIS, which is General Information Services, provides information to the government, okay, for government contracts. They have three class action lawsuits regarding their FCRA violations. Now, if they have – this company is huge. And if they have three class action lawsuits regarding FCRA violations, that would go ahead and confirm to you that there's some money out there for erroneous reporting. And these companies collectively are huge. Are you one of them? Fighting back by claiming the FCRA is unconstitutional. This was in this lawsuit, this class action lawsuit, GIS, General Information Services, response to the lawsuit was that the FCRA is unconstitutional. And GIS has resulted to suing its own client, the federal government. So GIS saying that, look, the FCRA is a bunch of bullshit. All right, excuse my language. It's unconstitutional. They don't want to be held liable. They want to be able to report information the way they gather it, where they gather it from the hood, from Hollywood, from the government, from debt collectors, from insurance companies, everywhere. They don't care how the information is gathered, okay? They don't care if in one sentence it says you're one thing and another it says another. They're just concerned about making their money. So they sued the government. The FTC, and said that, look, man, the FCRA is unconstitutional, all right? So in response to this, the government, the FTC, and the big boys, Department of Justice, and, all right, the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, so he had three other federal agencies come back and jump on their ass, filed a memorandum brief that supports the constitutionality of the FCRA, which in turn deemed the FCRA constitutional. So they filed a memorandum brief in that lawsuit and said that, look, we don't know what you're talking about. You're an idiot for trying to sue us saying that it's unconstitutional. It's here to stay. All right? Adding insult to injury, GIS is not only hit with litigation that can cost upwards of $1 billion, all right? That's just litigation, all right? It's litigation from these class action lawsuits. So if this company can afford $1 billion, they're selling information on you. How much money are they making? And do you deserve a piece of that pie when you find erroneous information in your credit reports, all right? But also class action notices alone are expected to exceed $250 million, okay? So the litigation could cost just this company $1 billion, and the class action notices alone is going to exceed $250 million. Are you getting a piece of that? This motion signifies that GIS, may be the latest consumer report agency, okay? You notice those words, consumer report agency, to be hit with an extraordinary fine due to non-compliance. A repeat offender, HireRight, this is another agency, consumer report agency, will be forced to pay $2.6 million to those candidates who have been affected by misstatement on consumer reports through the refusal to use reasonable practices to ensure maximum accuracy of information, failing to provide customers a copy of their reports, and the lax reinvestigation of consumer disputes, which is the FCRA. HireRight violated the FCRA as required by federal law. The result is the second largest civil penalty that the FTC has seen to date. The DOJ, Department of Justice, filed a complaint on behalf of the FTC proposing an order against HireRight, which requires them to discontinue illegal practices. In addition, credit reporting agencies and employers who provide and or use consumer reports for hiring decisions must allow a candidate to access their information and dispute any inaccuracies they find on their consumer credit report, even if the credit report contains no adverse information. Furthermore, CRAs are required to notify consumers of the information found during the reinvestigation within 5 days of completion. Okay, I have heard of different people who have applied for employment through government agencies, state agencies, things of that nature. And usually these employers require you to pay for your background. All right, but many times, and they will come back and say, oh, you know, sorry, we can't hire you based on your background information. I had a friend of mine that was denied that way. But they would not disclose to him what information, how did you come to that decision? What information was provided that caused you to deny me employment? And they said, well, we can't provide that information. You'll have to contact human resources or something of the nature. So this is what the FTC and the Department of Justice is saying, that you should be able to dispute that information. If an employer makes a decision or a creditor makes a decision based on erroneous information in the credit report, you should be able to dispute that information and say, hey, that's not accurate, all right? But let's talk strategy, as Sharif always does. Let's say you had that situation and there was a background check or a credit check that had erroneous information and you applied for this $100,000 job. And you were denied because of the information erroneously being reported by some consumer reporting agency or some agency such as this, GIS or LexisNexis or HireRight, all right? And you lost out on that $100,000 job. Could you not go and sue them for actual damages of $100,000? I would say you absolutely can, all right? So I just want to discuss that. That's a long article. HireRight, which is one of the other companies, recently settled a FCRA class action lawsuit for $28 million and are still battling other federal lawsuits over its non-compliant consumer reporting practices. When I tell you guys there are millions and billions out there with respects to your credit report, that should be a good indication that it is. Okay? Some attorneys are smart enough to go ahead and file class action lawsuits, because these companies are responsible for reporting billions of pages of information to credit reporting agencies and other background check entities. And a lot of times they don't care how the information is situated. They are just making money on selling your personal information to someone or personal information that allegedly is about you that has nothing to do with you. So I wanted to share that with you just to let you guys know how important the FCRA is in your information in terms of credit reporting and how we should stop giving out our information freely. There was a news show, I forget, a investigative report done by, it might have been CNN or one of the other media outlets, and it was done on fraudulent tax returns being done, being filed with the Internal Revenue Service, okay? And this is another level that I want to bring to the community on how we just have all right to plausible deniability of any information that is out there in the information world. There was a big scam, and I believe a ongoing scam, whereby hackers or immigrants or low-level criminals were obtaining your name, your Social Security number, your date of birth, and actually filing tax returns in your name and actually being successful at getting back checks in your name from the Treasury Department and the IRS. The last article I read, there was allegedly about $50 billion in fraudulent returns paid out to individuals that was in Mexico, UK, I mean, who knows where they were. Information that we freely give to these entities. When we go to the dentist, we fill out a form and we give that $10 an hour clerk everything they need to duplicate our identity, to use our consumer purchasing power if it's good, if you have a good credit score and a good credit history. Not only that, they can now file the tax returns for you, not even give you a cut, and get tax returns in your name. That is still ongoing. The IRS responded by, I believe they offer a PIN number now to sort of kind of validate that you who you say you are. But we all know that these type of breaches and type of identity theft goes way further, okay? We know that if you know the name of somebody and date of birth, you can go out here and be driving, if you do that as an occupation, and get pulled over and use someone else's identity, okay? It's been done by plenty of people that I know, okay, that showed up somewhere and like, you got a warrant. Warrant for what? For a ticket. What ticket? In Oklahoma. I've never been to Oklahoma. Well, you gotta go through the system and prove that, all right? This is what we're facing these days, and it's very dangerous, okay? Your proprietary information, your confidential information needs to be guarded, all right? And that and everybody knows from what's going on these days that even your phone number can reveal certain information about you in terms of location, who you talk to, who you texting. All right? We got scandals popping up all over the place. We have government officials abusing their power. They're getting caught because why? They're using email. They're using text messages. All right? They're using public forums, Facebook. Okay? To be careful, our community, on the information that we have out there. I think a good transition to protect some of this information is to take some of the processes that are employed by USEF and get yourself an EIN number or a trust number and start building up your corporate credit. I will have a guest on next week that runs a corporate credit company that will teach you how to build corporate credit. I believe shows have been done on this network similar to that. But I think the time has come for us to conceal our identity behind the statutory and artificial entities that we can form ourselves that will protect our personal information and instead have the corporate information as the front person. I think the time has come for us to begin doing that more often than not because our personal information is under attack and we have to protect that information, all right? We have to say no when someone is asking for that Social Security number. We have to be careful when someone is making a copy of our driver's license. That information, if you give me your driver's license, if you just give me your name and address, I will be able to find information about you that you don't want me to have. Okay? You can pay $19, $20, $30, $40 to get that information. That's the time that we're living in right now. And although on this show I teach you how to deal with debt and cleaning up credit, it would make no sense to do all of that and then give your information to one person and that information then is used in a form of identity. These debt collectors that call you, they're not supposed to have that information, okay? With these debt collecting agencies, these are agencies that will hire anybody, crackheads, drunks, rehabilitated persons or people that are not rehabilitated. They hire any junkie off the street, and that junkie is in the computer looking at your name, your date of birth, and many times you guys erroneously verify it when they call, all right? Someone calls you on the phone. How do you know who that person is on the phone? I never give out information over the phone. Can you verify it? No, I'm not going to verify anything. If you have it there, you can tell it to me maybe, depending on who I'm speaking with. You can tell it to me, and I'll say, okay, that sounds about right. But I'm not going to verify anything on the phone. You can be anybody on the phone, okay? Give me your number, your badge, your ID number. I will call you back, verify who I'm speaking with, and then I might be able to provide certain information or verify certain information in order for me to conduct my business. We have to be careful, family, about this information. We can't trust anything, not tax returns, driver's license information, court docket information, all right? People don't hold in high regard information anymore because it's so easily given. These agencies have been so successful at getting information from us that they're not supposed to get. And then they have plausible deniability because they say, well, we asked you for it and you gave it to us. All right? How do you know where that information is going once you give it to that entity or that person? How do you know the background of that person on the phone? Okay? They could be working for a cartel that's trying to get information so they can file tax returns, get a driver's license, get a birth certificate, get anything else they want. Okay, use your debit card or your credit card overseas. I mean, these things are happening. Financial crimes are on the rise because of the information that's so freely accessible out there. And when you have entities that can be formed, like the entities I spoke about in this article, that can make billions of dollars selling information that you freely give, I think that money should be in your pocket. All right? So let's move on from that. Just wanted to share that information with us. We have to be careful. Sisters, be careful about the information even you give out to the brothers when you meet. Have you a Google phone number or some other in-between number, some catch-all number, so you're not giving out your actual phone number? We have to take these precautions because it's just real bad out there, and I feel sorry for a lot of people out there that doesn't take that extra step to protect their information. All right? All right, I got my guest here, my co-host from another network, our brother Latif. I believe he has some information to bring to the table. I'm going to open up his line, 678-0935. The illustrious brother Latif, are you there, brother?
Yes. Can you hear me?
I can hear you, sir, loud and clear. How are things on your end?
Well, listen, you picked up a hot topic. It's a topic that I share with you as well. This whole thing about how to navigate through the commerce and yet still get the benefits and resources that's available, okay? And what the audience has to understand is because I've heard Brother Yusuf El say there is no money, there's credit. That's right, okay? So what we're managing really is credit and debt. And in order to, so there's always the promise of giving you credit or clearing up your debt, okay? And so that is a foregone conversation that we're having. Now, I would like to introduce at your permission, Brother Sharif, the fact that there is a potential other solution to the problem. I do subscribe to corporate credit. I think that is the best way because it puts you in a position to have a straw man, a fictitious entity, doing commerce, and you control that entity. Okay? What's the pros and cons to it? The pro is that if the corporation runs into trouble, you bankrupt, okay? But that bankruptcy does not fall on your personal profile, okay?
Correct.
Now, Chapter 11 bankruptcies are more expensive than Chapter 13, and corporations can't do a Chapter 13. They can do 11s and 7s, okay?
Correct.
So that's one of the cons to it, and also a corporation will have to have an attorney to help it do its Chapter 11 or Chapter 7 dissolution, okay? But it is something that needs to be known, that there's another way, that you should spend more time building corporate entities and playing the corporate shell game, just like the preponderance of creditors are. They are corporations seeking to extract money from you. Now, having said that, I was riding down the street, and I was thinking about a conversation that Bo Biden the son of Vice President Joe Biden. And he was on, in 2012, he was on the Bill Mayer show. And Bill was asking him, he said, you know, you guys get more corporation than you got actual people living there. In other words, there's over a million plus corporations that are registered in Delaware, and there's less than a million people, about 900,000 people that actually live there. So the actual statutory citizens by corporation outnumber the live and flesh citizens. Think about that for a minute, okay? Yet, Delaware is known as the corporate capital of the United States because so many corporations, counties, government seats, and everything else have a Delaware corporation, okay? So it just shows you the trend. The trend is to work and function out of the corporation to remove the individual liability. Now, that's something I'm sure that you're going to expound on more, Brother Malik. But I'd like to open the audience up to another subject called CPNs, okay? And this was something that we were discussing the other night about what is a CPN and how does it use. Now, I'm going to throw this out for additional research. And I think it's important that the audience and we research this phenomenon together because it could be something very viable.
Yeah, it's interesting you bring up the CPN, and I have – they seem to be making their way back. I never really dove into that aspect of credit protection. I read a little bit on it a couple of months ago. I know people that use it, and I know some people that abuse it and has been prosecuted for illegal use of those numbers. If you would share with the community, Latif, your knowledge of what a CPN is, what it is used for, and I understand we haven't researched it, and this is not something I am bringing to the community. It's just something we're discussing. Y'all know that I am very liable and responsible, and I'm very sensitive about information that I put out there to make sure it's fully vetted, and it's something that doesn't have consequences to utilizing. So, but go ahead, Latif, and tell us what have you learned about it and how that information is used and what it is exactly.
Okay. All right. Well, first of all, CPN stands for, let's get the definition of it. And let me also say that a CPN is a created number that is kind of off the grid. Okay, it's a credit private number, a certified private number. And the history of it is that your Social Security number is regulated. Okay, even with the credit bureaus is regulated, and how people use that data or how they're supposed to use it. So your preamble today, starting off the show, talking about the under this FCRA, Fair Credit Reporting Act, Fair Credit Billing Act, and the Fair Debt Collection Practicing Act, FDC, and CPA, evolve around consumers and credit and identifying consumers and credit and accounts. And but the CPN, and so what happened, the FTC came in and brought in all these sister acts or sister codes to look at making sure there's accurate reporting, accurate billing, and accurate debt collection. In the process of the debt collection, one of the things that's interesting about the FDCPA, when you read the first part of it, the government openly admits that there's a lot of abuse in debt collection practice. Okay? And boy, I mean, you know, like just the many things you were saying, that you have to be very, very careful. problem is that we're creatures of habit, okay? We want the easy way. It's more difficult to say, no, I'm not going to give you that. I'll give you an alternative. You know, I don't think it's legal for you to be having my information than it is to give someone your Social Security. It's been a long-standing rule that the Social Security is only for the government, mainly for the government purpose, okay? And they've done some expansion on it. So we'll get into that. So let's talk more specifically about the CPN, what it is and what it's not. Okay. Now, CPN stands for Credit Privacy Numbers or Credit Protection Number. It's a 9-digit number, just like your Social Security, established only on the credit bureau's level to report your credit transaction. Now, what this means, according to the research, is that it's a number that they're using outside of the law. Okay? This is not an EIN or tax ID number, and it is not issued by the government. See? So your EIN and your Social Security number are issued by the government, so they can regulate it. The CPN number is a private internal number, okay, that the creditors issue, okay? Example of that is check system, okay? Check system is a system that the banks use, and while we're talking about check system, let's go ahead and digress to that just a little bit, just for the analogy purpose, okay? Is that check system is a system that was brought out to that the financial groups, financial banks agree to be members into the check system. So, let's say the check system now used as an internal method for the banks to communicate with each other. For instance, if you have an account with Bank A, and you overdraft on that account and you close it out without paying the overdraft fee, Bank A will put you into check system. Okay? May not even show up on your credit report, but you're in check system. So when you go to open up another checking account with a savings or loan or a bank, the information will come up in check system, as the bank is doing a background check on you. Okay? And you will be declined. So that's how check system works. It's a private network behind all the regulation.
So what? Right, they're information providers, correct.
Right. So what we really need to have, what we need to have, is the FTC to go into check system and have a way in which our rights are preserved or protected in check system. I've heard people going in check system, they can't get out of it even after they paid the balance off. You're still in check system. There's no rules at that point in time what purges it, what allows you to get new credit. And, you know, Brother Malik, this is why you have a lot of people have to go to the alternative checking method, which is Dot Green and check places and et cetera, simply because they're now involved in, they're in check system and they can't get out. Okay? So, let's go back to the CPN number. Okay? CPN number is then operating very similarly. That the creditors, you know, they have a credit association, and, you know, they get together and they agree that they'll issue credit protection number. Okay? Because it's not your Social Security number or your tax ID number, what they do with it and everything else is, you know, it can be to your disadvantage or it can be to your advantage. So we're just telling you what it is, okay? Now, your Social Security number, like I said, is controlled by law and the public law, et cetera. It's under Title 5, Section 7 of Public Law 93-579, Government Organization and Employees Act, okay? And basically it says that it shall be unlawful for any federal, state, or local government agency to deny any individual any right, benefit, or privilege provided by law because such individual refusal to disclose his or her Social Security account number. Now, if you look at this act, you see the first thing it says, federal, state, or local government agency. It didn't talk about private employers. And notice that the proliferation of a lot of people not being employed now is because they're going to your credit profile, gathering information, okay, and using that against you, okay? Now, it says based on the 1974 Privacy Act, you are only required to give your Social Security number out for the following reason: for employment, for tax purposes, to obtain a driver's license, to register a motor vehicle, to receive public assistance. So that's the law as of 1974. So besides the federal government, they have made exemptions for the employers for tax purposes to obtain a driver's license, to register a motor vehicle, to receive public assistance. Have they made the same exceptions for guns, too? Sharif,
Chief, I tell you, I'm not going to answer that question. It'll take me into another hour.
Okay. Well, we're just trying to show people how things can digress pretty quickly. You can legally refuse disclosure of Social Security number for any purpose other than those specified above. Now, when you're saying legally refuse, that means you got to stand your ground, okay? And probably need to have this code and probably ask somebody, listen, you want something from me, here's the public law. Now, you tell me where it's legal for you to require or ask this from me, okay? That includes insurance companies, etc., because they have to show that there's a requirement. Now, what I'm trying to build a case for is that maybe we need to look at using CPN, okay, a CPN-type number, okay, because it's been reported that currently according to the FBI website, an article number 35, currently the federal law allows individuals to legally use CPNs for financial reporting and protect those individuals who do not wish to disclose their Social Security Administration numbers. Individuals who acquire CPNs are completely responsible for any debt they incur using this number. So if you decide to use a CPN number and you're using it as an overlay number to protect your real Social Security number. So that's a conscious decision at that point. And I am looking at an FBI website right now as we're talking. Okay? And this article comes up on mortgage fraud, et cetera, et cetera. But the site does talk about the very issue that we're addressing here, using the CPN number. So, as you eloquently have laid out, Brother Sharif, is that there's something that has to be done because this loosey-goosey, give out your number, give me your Social Security number, is one of the biggest ways of identity theft. Okay, it's rampant. And so people may want to consider protecting them their own cause by doing more investigation of these CPN numbers.
Indeed.
It appears to have backing. And again, this is something we need to research more. I just want to give a little background to kind of support some of the things that you were saying earlier.
Good job. Good job. I appreciate that. And we will do a show. I'll do a show. I promise to do a show in the next 30 days. Once I acquire some information, do some research, I'll have a guest that actually, Latif, is the same gentleman that was on your show that did the corporate credit show a few months ago. I'll be having him on the show to discuss ways to build corporate credit and things of that nature. But I definitely appreciate that monologue on the CPNs. I've heard the numbers. I've seen governmental reports saying that they were deemed illegal. People were using those numbers as a replacement when they had bad credit. But I don't know. I really don't know. And when I don't know something, I say I don't know. Mm-hmm.
Well, let me say one thing, and I'm glad you brought that up, because there is a difference between the CPN number and another one called – another process called it's called – hold on, I'll get you the name. Segregation, that's what it's called, okay?
Okay.
And this is very, very important, okay? It's called file segregation, matter of fact. That's a more formal term. Okay?
File segregation, okay.
Right, file segregation. So CPN should not be confused with file segregation. It's a different mode. Now, let's define what file segregation is. And this is straight from Lexington Law, okay? So what is file segregation? A fraudulent practice of creating a new consumer credit file, typically performed by applying for an employer identification number that is then used in place of a Social Security number on credit applications. Now, what are they saying here? You go into a corporate business, you get your EIN number, but now you turn around and use that as your individual, not a corporation, but an individual Social Security number for purposes of obtaining credit. In other words, if you get an EIN number for a corporation, keep it for corporate use. Don't intermix it over into the personal side, okay? Personal flesh and blood side, or as you call it. I'm trying to make a distinction here, okay?
Right.
For some consumers, the idea of starting again with brand new credit file is very compelling. When placed with the prospect of trying to rebuild their credit after filing for bankruptcy or experiencing a foreclosure or dealing with some other credit catastrophe, creating completely new credit identity seems like an ideal solution. Many fraudulent credit repair clinics have offered to help desperate consumers create a new credit file and process known as file segregation. In exchange for upwards of a few thousand dollars, these companies promise a cure for bad credit. Okay? So here again, what a person has to be aware of is to ask the question, is this file segregation? Are you creating, are you using a file number, okay, off of an EIN number and then giving it to me? Okay? All right? The file segregation is illegal, and what many consumers do not realize is that they fall into this credit repair scam is that they can get in trouble with the law as well as the clinic they're working with. When using the new credit ID on a credit application, consumers can end up being charged with a number of crimes, including the federal wire fraud and civil fraud under the state law.
That's correct. Okay.
So I want to make sure that when we talk about CPN numbers, we're not talking about using a credit, an EIN number from a business that you obtain and then using it on the personal side, okay? Business credit is business credit. You need to understand the rules of creating your business, establishing a business credit profile, okay, separate individual. Now, sometimes to apply for credit, they'll ask for the guarantor to be a person to be a guarantor for the corporation, okay? Well, you know, they may do that for a period of time, and then send a notice after the credit has been established. They can send a notice that that officer no longer exists or has been terminated, so that guarantor is no more under obligation to that corporation. Okay?
That's correct.
So there are ways in which a person can be a temporary guarantor for the purposes of obtaining initial credit. There's also, once you get your credit established in corporation, there's available what you call non-recourse loans. The whole key thing about your second bite of the apple through corporate credit is to make sure you manage it right. So thank you for the meeting.
That's correct. All right. Sounds great. All right. We're going to have another show. We'll go in. We'll dedicate a show just to corporate credit and the ways that the community can obtain corporate credit, sort of protect their identity. But again, I just wanted to let the community know and the listeners know to protect your information and start questioning those that are requesting that information from you, and understand that you are not obligated to provide that information. And just look at your surroundings and make sure that who you're giving it to, okay? I'll just leave it at that. Just look at who you're handing that information to. Just because information is on a form don't mean you need to fill it out. Put a line through it and put NA. Okay? So just wanted to make that clear. Brother Latif, anything else? Any news? Any current events? Anything you want to share? What's going on your end before I go to the line and get to the community's questions?
Yeah, well, in Georgia and those states, I want to make everybody generally aware the fact that we are in the political season. And what does that mean? Congress functions throughout most of the year, okay? And they'll have a summer break, and they'll come back, and they have a fall break, and then they'll do an end of the year, and then start the new session. That's on the federal level. On the state legislators have a season for legislation. And typically starts the new year off January and run for a period of time. I know here in Georgia that legislative session is about 90 full days. Now, there are laws that the governor can ask for emergency sessions or for the sessions to be extended because there are some laws that need to be determined affecting the state for the rest of the year. You have all those other things that can extend sessions or bring back a session. But typically there's a 90 to 120-day process from state to state to start the legislative aspect. And this is very critical understanding when we talk about civics, knowing about government and people and what's going on, because in these 90 days, the legislators at the state level are trying to determine the laws or repealing laws or what is, you know, or what is to happen with respect to laws for the state. With this mortgage foreclosure crisis, there have been a lot of new laws that have been enacted. Last year, I believe, in California, they came up with the Homeowners Bill of Rights, which one thing it did was supported what they have, the Rosenthal Act, with some other things dual tracking. Now, dual tracking is a process where if you're trying to apply for a loan mod, that the lender cannot proceed on the foreclosure at the same time, simultaneously, called dual tracking, okay? And that was a common abuse that was occurring when all these people were trying to get loan mods, all fell behind, lost their jobs, whatever the case may be. And here the loan servicer is inducing people that, well, you know, we can consider you for a loan mod. Don't go talk to anybody else. You can do it yourself. Come to us, okay? And then they're dual tracking you. And then you get a denial. They offer you something that is unacceptable. And the minute you reject it, then is selling your property on the foreclosure steps. So California, which is a non-judicial state, implemented a dual tracking system to protect the homeowners. That's one of the things that came out of that. I'm trying to reiterate how important these sessions are. Well, once again, we have that point here in Georgia, and I'm sure all across the country. Some of the things that are particular to Georgia is that there's no definition for robo-sign. Also, something that Georgia share is with a lot of other states is that many of the federal courts and some of the state courts have said that assignments that assign the mortgage or the note from one entity to another entity, that because those parties to that assignment do not include the borrower or the homeowner, that they have no rights to contest it, even if it's fraudulent, okay? And this becomes quite absurd because, just like Brother Sharif said, well, first of all, that assignment is your property, your name, okay, your contract. So they've got all your footprint on it, and they're assigning somebody else and say, but you can't contest it, okay, as though you're a piece of chattel or something, okay? So I was in a session yesterday, private session, I guess, was invited to, and there was a couple of attorneys and some legislators that seemed to be somewhat interested in this foreclosure argument of new bills that are going to be purported or put up for vote, okay? And the chairman of it was making a determination if he was which ones he would entertain, okay? So he has the power to entertain it, okay? Now, this is very, very crucial and critical information here, folks, because these are people deciding tens of millions of people's lives about what bills go for to correct certain fundamental rights and practices in the state and which ones won't be considered. So we're in this room, and listen, there's only about 8 to 10 people in this room giving the input. All right?
Wow.
And of those 8 to 10, 3 of them are the chairman's assistants. But here's the thing. Guess who the representatives are, mostly, by full-time trade, and guess who the chairman is, mostly, by full-time trade? They're lawyers. They have law officers. So when you're giving your business card, they're giving you a business card, this is so-and-so-and-so-and-so of this law firm, okay? Okay? So what I'm trying to tell you is that many of these lawyers are the politicians that are deciding what laws are being placed on the books. So we go down there, and we're talking about these laws, and there was a few things that were brought up, and one of the things that was a resounding thing, earful, that the chairman got, is that the court systems are ignoring evidence. They're not allowing people to get to the evidence. They're using these rulings saying that homeowners can't attack an assignment. And many cases, the U versus J.P. Morgan Chase case, which was decided in June of 2013, which was, most people say, is a very, very bad ruling. Okay, in that ruling, J.P. Morgan Chase was given us the security deed, and they were foreclosing on you just by the security deed, okay? And the Supreme Court decided that foreclosing on a security deed, even though it does not purport that J.P. Morgan Chase is the beneficial interested party, okay? Now, understand this language. The beneficial interested party is someone who actually gave a loan, okay, or is the holder in due course. That's the beneficial interested party. Well, J.P. Morgan Chase didn't initiate the loan, okay, got to sign the security deed, and they're given the right by the Supreme Court to foreclose. Okay? So one of the attorneys was very, very eloquent. It showed that he understood securitization and a lot of the lending practices. Okay? And he was showing how multiple assignments in itself by MERS were very questionable. He said, but fundamentally, many times what only the homeowner wants to know is who owns the note so that I can negotiate with them. Who owns the note so that the servicer is saying that the note holder has no interest to discuss with me, but contractually, if I'm in touch with the note holder, okay, I can talk to them privately. So the chairman said, okay, you know what? I can see that argument. I can see that having standing. So when it was all said and done, he said, okay, I will consider a bill that would make it commensurate for the note holder to be known in these foreclosure actions, okay? Now, so he told the guy to write the deal, and the representative was there, and I pulled him to the side and said, you cannot determine who the note holder is, the new note holder, from the original one, unless you have the ability to attack the assignment at the same time, because that's the only way it's going to get conveyed to him, okay? And so he agreed with me, the attorney that's assisting the representative writing. Okay, he agreed that you'll try a two-pronged attack to give Georgia citizens some type of avenue to, in essence, support the new Tiller law that came out in 2009 that says that any time a servicer has questioned who is the note holder, you can ask specific questions about their address, contact information,
etc. Private database has been updated.
And this was made aware to the chairman that, you know, that's covered in Tiller, but the courts are ignoring the arguments when you bring it in.
Well, Latif, this is why, and I can understand, and I know you are one of the very few that actually goes out there for the consumers and the homeowners, and you fight. And you do not mind getting into a debate, discussion with the politicians with respects to foreclosure. I give you honor for that, and I really, you're really one of the few that really has been consistent in trying to get the legislature and the Congress and different politicians. You have a lot of politicians on your show, state representatives and things of that nature. I really applaud you in that. My position is this, though. And on my show, I just teach the people, I don't give a damn who they say, the note holder, the note carrier, the note flyer. I really don't care. I'm suing all of them, okay? I'm suing them under consumer protection law, and I'm going to sue you, and I'm going to be entitled to trial and discovery. I'm going to find out what you know or what you don't know, because I know whoever – they can pass a law today and say, well, you have to know who the note holder is. I'm saying you're lying. You're not a note holder. You're not a note owner. You're not a creditor. You're not a mortgagee. You're a debt collector, and I'm going to sue you, okay? And I'm going to sue you for all the damages that I possibly can to scare you out of your wits from even trying to pursue my real property. And I think while you're doing those things and while some legislation may be formulated to help the homeowner, I don't think anybody in the legal society cares about passing any bills, okay? And understand they're bills, and when they write them, there's compensation for it with those bills. So I don't think they're going to do anything, especially in the state of Georgia, is going to do anything to help homeowners. I think this is a land grab out there. I think, you know, the legal society is responsible for taking most of these properties. And I just don't think you're going to get anywhere. So that's why I teach a model for people to use the consumer protection laws to go ahead and just sue those individuals without trying to figure out who owns what. Put them on the, put them in their place, identify them, and most of the times they're going to be debt collectors. And if that's the case, I subscribe to the fact I'm not going to play the game of creditor service. I'm not even playing those games. That tree has too many branches. It's too confusing. It's too ambiguous. It's too conflicting. And the only thing I'm going to ask is, are you a debt collector or are you a creditor? Okay, got you. We're going to move on in this particular manner. So give me the results of what happened there, and then I'm going to go to the caller line and also have Yousef on the call. Your line is open, Yousef. Are you there?
Yeah, brother. Hey, how you doing? How you doing, Brother Latif?
Good.
Good morning. Good. I just wanted to, I was in listening to the show. Great show, by the way. And I just want to comment on the CPN numbers, the credit bureaus, business credit. As someone who has had experience in dealing with all those for the last 25 years, I can say this publicly. I used the EIN number to purchase houses and all kind of stuff and got the federal government knew about it, sat down, talked to them about it, didn't have a problem. And let me tell you why, right? Now, today laws may have changed because that was some time ago. But the thing was, the principle how the CPN credit privacy number works is, back in the day, we used to call them Social Security generating. We used to generate numbers out of thin air. And there is a certain methodology that they use to generate these numbers, because the first three numbers indicates what state you were born in. And, it's, you know, you had to break down how the Social Security number is generated. Next, there is no law that requires the credit bureaus to have your Social Security number. People have to understand who the credit bureaus are. Credit bureaus are not government entities. They are private corporations for business, for profit, for gain. So you don't have to give them nothing. You don't have to give them your Social Security number, and they can't require. They're not even supposed to have it. As a matter of fact, when you file bankruptcy, how that ends up on your bankruptcy report is the federal government doesn't report that to the credit bureau. They have individuals who go down into public records and find this information and then put it on your credit. Now, you can use the Fair Credit Reporting Act to force them to tell who reported that on your credit report. And if they cannot tell you who put that on your credit report, they got to take it off.
They
got to take it off. You got to who is the person that reported this on my on, that's one. I'm just giving that away as a freebie. All right. Next, with the bank accounts and all of this, and I want people to think about this. This is kind of common sense. EIN numbers and Social Security numbers and credit privacy numbers, I've had all of them, and they are all good. The illegality of it is if you're using somebody else's Social Security number, if you pick a number and it belongs to someone else, you can be charged with maybe fraud or something like that. But the thing about it is, you can pick a number out of thin air and go use it. It would be difficult to do because you're taking a chance on whether or not somebody already has that number. So my question would be, how would they make a determination if you just picked a nine-digit number out of thin air, that it's an EIN number, a Social Security number, or anything like that, when the credit bureaus don't have access to any of that information? Matter of fact, TransUnion, these are information collecting agencies. They buy and sell information. I think it's either Experian or TransUnion is not even an American country. It's in English, and it's in England. So the next question
That's
is
true.
How you got these people in another country in the United States of America collecting data and selling
it. That's right. Interesting.
I got a very good friend of mine. He wrote a book. Very good seller. The federal government's not too happy about it, but he's writing another one. It's called How to Outsmart the Credit Bureaus. And people can look at it on the Internet. But it really is still good, because at the beginning of this book, he explains who these people are, what families own these industries, and how they're not supposed to be having your information like that.
Now, Yousef, let me interrupt right quick. Let me interrupt you. What you just said is very profound. We have, you know, I had a discussion, and I'll let you go on. I just want to interject this. I was discussing with Latif, one of the ladies from the mortgage task force with the president, all right? And she was discussing with me how she said, Brother Sharif, it is incredible the type of information I'm privy to. Our country is being owned. Every day I see companies, and when I do the background information on them, these countries are everywhere but in the United States. She says everything in this country is damn near sold. So what you just said, Youssef, by foreigners having access to all of our proprietary information, man, it just heightens our awareness that we need to really, really, really be diligent. But go ahead, brother. You were rolling.
You know, and you're absolutely correct. As a matter of fact, I'm going to make this statement, and this is just my own personal observation. I think the foreclosure debacle was staged because to allow foreigners to come in and get the country, because every time I'm looking and the people who are snatching up these foreclosures, a lot of them are foreigners. And
that's
the
right.
Banks are, too. I researched some of these banks, and everybody on the board are foreigners. And that's just my own personal observation. I just think that because the United States is $17 trillion in debt, the bonds to this debt are owned by foreigners. That means the country is owned by foreigners. And
that's right.
In order to foreclose on that, I think they have staged this housing thing, and that reason nobody is winning because they owe these people this money. And those debts are guaranteed by all the property in the United States, including the people. And instead of having a war or something, they are allowing them to come in. Because I'm not hearing Los Angeles, downtown Los Angeles, look like Koreatown. I mean, Koreans in the Oriental are taking over L.A. I mean, they got all the best stuff, you know, and the neighborhoods and everything. So, and you're seeing just an influx of them coming in more and more and more, and they own the bonds to all the debt in the country. So it only makes sense to me, but that's just that could be a theory. Let me add to that,
Youssef. There was a big case, and those of you should go read this case, and it was filed, I believe, in 2012, and Latif, you had the attorney on your show and when we were co-hosting this show, and that case is the Abeel versus ABEEL versus Bank of America. And this was a big law firm, the Spire Law Group, out of New York, that filed this massive lawsuit against, and he named all the heavy hitters, Mr. O, Geithner, all these, and they did research in all these securitization remics. And they found that these addresses were to dirt lots, to land that was never inhabited. They tied all those things to all the heavy politicians, the name brand politicians that was out there. Look, they said that they received money from cartels, from drug dealers, these banks, you know, HSBC, all these other banks. They were hit by doing money laundering. So I absolutely agree with you, Youssef, that this whole thing was staged because they stole the money from the investors, many of which were foreigners. As well, you know, China owns, I believe, upon information and belief, over 50% of the U.S. And then so they stole the money from the investors, and then they put the mortgage, the real property situation in the country, in a tailspin to where anybody can now come and make a claim. And let me tell you, Youssef, and I know this for a fact. There are many people in this legal society that is stealing this property. There are many LLCs. There are many trusts that are being formed in order to use the court system through certain judges, certain political officials, and they are acquiring the real property of this country illegally.
They are. And let me talk about trust for a second as a person who deals with real estate investment trust. And I think that the answer to the conundrum is very simple. A lot of times in these foreclosures, they say that if nobody bids on the property, they say that the property goes back to the beneficiary. Okay, the trustee is the owner of the property. Okay, whatever bank, if you study real estate, and if you study, because these are private trusts. This is what I want people to understand. These are not public. I deal with private information, like credit privacy numbers. I understand the difference in public and private. So these trusts that are being foreclosed on are private. They're not public, okay? So a real estate investment trust is a private trust, and it is an irrevocable trust, meaning that when they put that property in that trust, it does not go, the beneficiary don't have any say-so on it. All the beneficiary is a certificate holder, and they have, they're just entitled to their prorated share of whatever money comes into that trust, and it gets to be distributed annually, up to 95%. And the reason they use this is because they use a corporation, there will be a double taxation. And with this, there's only one tax, and that's the certificate holders, they are the ones that are taxed, but the trust isn't taxed. And that increases their revenue. I had an attorney on this show who is winning a case because he showed where the property never was transferred to the trust.
Right.
Now, it is my contention that none of these properties are in any of these trusts.
None of them are.
And it wasn't because, like what he said, because they didn't have too many and they didn't have time. No. They couldn't transfer it because the property is already paid for, and that would be fraud. All right? They couldn't convey it in. So what they do is they convey what's called rights, title, and interest in the trust. And they do this with automobile loans. You can check with the Federal Trade Commission, and if you look on the back of your automobile loan, they have what is called a notice of claims and defense notice on these automobile loans. Now, they're supposed to have the same thing on the mortgages, but they don't tell people about their claims and defenses, and that claim and defense is recoupment. And this is why you got to know the accounting side of all of this. But the reason I don't think it's transferred, it cannot revert back to the beneficiary because the beneficiary has no entitlement to anything that is in the trust. So that's wrong.
Correct. That's
when they say that, they say it reverted back to the beneficiary. The owner of the trust property is the trustee. Anybody who studies trust law understands that. And so I'm looking at this, and they have to think that you're stupid when they make that statement. So I'm thinking it's all fraud because, okay, well, now I got to look and see, because you're talking about reverting back to the beneficiary. I know trust law, and in trust law, beneficiaries don't have anything because that's going to be construed as a corporation. They're going to use, they're going to lose their tax status. You know, they got where they're
that's
able
right.
to get a tax benefit. So if you
right.
start if you start operating this trust in a way that is not conducive with how the IRS outlines that a private trust should be operated, it's going to be construed as an association or a partnership, and they're going to tax it accordingly. So my next thing is to say it must be that these promissory notes are not in this trust. And these people do not have standing and status to foreclose on these properties, which means also that they are conducting the biggest theft in American history. And you can utilize the Patriot thing, but I know accounting. I know I've looked at this. I have access to documents. They don't make a loan. You cannot bring those arguments in the court because it's going to go against the compelling state interest. You can't bring private information into it. It's considered private information. They don't make a loan because they're bankrupt. It's on the public record. How can you give somebody money and you don't got no money? Federal Reserve notes are not money. So their accounting has to reflect that. Their accounting reflects, that's what the matching principle is all about. So if that's why they don't sign any affidavits, you don't ever see anybody, a banker or anyone, sign any affidavits, swear under penalty of perjury,
right.
take an oath, do anything to say that they gave you a loan.
That's right.
They never have.
Excellent point.
They will not do it because they can't do it because they didn't give you a loan. And that is another reason why the property is paid for. That's another reason why they didn't transfer the promissory notes, which is not a note, by the way. It's not a negotiable instrument. It is a security.
That's right.
It's a security. Right?
Especially
that's why they're
when
making a mortgage-backed security out of it. It's securitized. So it's not a negotiable instrument anymore. So the produce the note argument falls flat on its face. But I learned all this by studying a guy named Vernon H.C. Wright. He is the chairman of the Securitization Forum. And they had a white paper that all these guys wrote in 2004. And they also wrote some papers in the 80s that basically went over. In the early 80s, they knew that this securitization was fraudulent. I got the paper. I'll share it with anybody. Well, they're sitting here discussing when they were about to start to do this that it was going to be questionable on the legality of the process that they were about to attempt. But real estate investment trusts have been around a very long time. But
that's right.
This dude, A.C. Wright, after that Enron scandal in 2004, they started to they wanted to have this thing called full disclosure. They wanted the banks to give full disclosure to all of these people buying property of their rights of counterclaim and recoupment and set off. That's why I really believe set off is the answer. That set off, and you can read the Financial Accounting Standards Board Statement 140. This is where this is coming out of. This is not no Patriot
right.
type stuff. It's coming out of
right.
FASB 140, and they had attorneys all over the country. Anybody can get on Google and Google set off and isolation, set off, comma, isolation. Put that in, and you'll see all these white papers come up where all these attorneys are writing the Financial Accounting Standards Board about the this disclosure thing that they want, because they don't want to have – the banks don't want to have to tell the people of these rights they have, but the Financial Accounting Standards Board don't want anything like Enron happen again. So they want you to be fully informed, not for your benefit, so that you can waive your rights, because you can't waive rights if you haven't been told what your rights are.
Correct.
All right? So it ain't for your benefit why they want to do this. And then when you read this, you will see that they basically is saying that the American public is too stupid to ever realize what is going on anyway, so it's not necessary. They didn't say it in those words, but once you sit there and look up every word they're saying, because these guys are very intelligent who write this stuff, essentially, that's what it breaks down to, what they're saying. So I'm sharing all this information with people, and also back to the file segregation. I was reading something from the Federal Trade Commission on it, and one thing that was conspicuously absent in this documentation is any type of IRS code, code of federal regulation, or anything mm-hmm. like that that shows where it's illegal.
Right.
Now, it might be in the code of It might be in the code, but the thing is that I'm sitting here saying if you can't, because these are private entities and you are under no requirement to give them your Social Security number, and they're not supposed to be asking you for your
That's
Social
right.
Security number. And I'm going to give you one bit of piece of information. I'm going to get off the phone. And it's a thing I posted on my Facebook back in 2013. About opening up a bank account with a Social Security number. And this applies, these codes apply across the board about people giving away their Social Security number. I'm going to read this real quick and I'm going to get off the phone. It says, I recently tried to open a bank account with my local bank, and when they asked for the Social Security number, I informed them that I don't have one. They flatly refused and said that without a Social Security number, they absolutely could not open an account of any kind. I then proceeded thus to convince them that they were in the wrong. I informed them that I terminated my Social Security number legally in accordance with 20 CFR, Code of Federal Regulations 38744.1905, and I informed them that the bank could not be held legally responsible for anyone for failing to obtain a Social Security number from me pursuant to 31 CFR 103.34A1 and 3. I informed them that under the Internal Revenue Code, Section 6041, that they were not even required to provide any taxpayer identification numbers on the Form 1099, and that they filed with the IRS at the end of the year. And number four, I informed them that pursuant to 26 CFR 301.6109-1C, that they were under no legal obligation to obtain a Social Security number from me. And number five, I informed them that under 42 USC 408, that's United States Code 408, makes it a felony to use threat, duress, or coercion to try to force a person by fear or deceit to provide his Social Security number in an unlawful manner. After a brief meeting with the bank controller and legal counsel, I received a phone call stating that I would be allowed to open a checking account. Please pass this information along to your readers and hope that they may help someone else who may find themselves in this situation. Now, personally, me, I like to use business credit to circumvent all this, and trust. I like to use trust, and you can circumvent all of this stuff right here. But it's all about privacy. As long as you are not utilizing a number for some type of business or gain, some type of business or gain, then it is private. And that just is what it is, you know. So that would be my thing. I would say, okay, what gives these credit card companies, TransUnion, Equifax, and Experian, the right to have anybody's personal information? As a matter of fact, on the Social Security card they used to put on there, this is not to be used for identification purposes.
That's correct.
They put it right on the card because that's not what it's for. It's for what it says, Social Security. So
and Internal Revenue opinion. Service. That's correct.
I appreciate it, brother.
You
definitely
service. Shared that. I'm glad you chimed in because I know you
goes,
know more about.
Before he goes.
He's not going. He's not going. He's going to be here.
Before he goes, you gave some very good information, but I'd like to try to put this in context a little bit, Brother Yusufel. Obviously, you're a well-studied person, and, you know, as we go down this path, there's what you call different light rays. You know, there's blue ray, there's gamma ray, there's X-ray, there's all these different rays of light.
The electromagnetic spectrum, yes, I'm familiar with it.
Okay. And as people are learning these processes or they're perfecting them, they're not going to be at your stage because you are willing to do certain things that other people can't perceive or are not there yet. So I think what we try to do is give a baseline level of education where you need to be before you take the next step up. Okay? Now, that's not discounting anything you said. But we also have to look at the market. The predominant market out there is that people are entrapped into this giving out your Social Security number, and they need the credit because there is no money. They need the credit to continue to sustain themselves. And a lot of people would not be willing to forego the credit at this point in time until they realign themselves where they can be less credit dependent. Now, to your point about opening up bank accounts, there are banks that you can open up with no Social Security card. So there would, there's no Social Security number. There are a few, but they're around. Okay.
I don't mean to interrupt you, but I would contend there are more than a few. But go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Well, I'm talking about a few from the standpoint that. In numbers. I mean, the majority of the ones out there marketing.
I would say that I think there's a lot. There's an abundance of them. We just don't know how to access that particular procedure.
You got my gist.
That's what I would say.
You got my gist. So the thing is, it's a whole education process is to show people what they shouldn't be doing and other ways around it. Okay? Now, Brother Yusuf, Brother Sharif, you both know that there are a lot of people, instead of confronting the system, they'd rather go around the system. So they teach strategies how to maneuver around the issue as opposed to hitting it head on, okay? And that's where you get into maybe the political side of it, just like you were saying earlier, Brother Sharif, that, you know, forget about this code, that code, this law, whatever, I'll just go at it this way, okay? But the politics sometimes is good to have good laws on the books, and especially when you know they're piling up all these bad laws. We have to try to fight this not only from a battlefront in the legislation, but you also need to do it on the individual private person's rights, that they're firmly grounded in that. Because you get out there and you're going to have these actors, these state actors, that are saying, that comes with the presumption, well, you're doing something illegal. Then you got to go through this whole trialogue of saying, well, what makes it illegal? And then you're sitting there having this conversation of what's legal and illegal when some cases you can move around that subject and keep going.
Okay, I have to respond on that. I understand that they operate off presumptions, assumption, and color of law. However, when you're dealing with a public official, there is no presumption of an illegality of anything because everybody in the public gets their delegation of authority from some type of statute, code, rule, or regulation. So if they say that something is illegal, they should immediately be able to cite some type of state code, or something like that. So you cannot, that's why I just gave all these codes out to show, you know, went to the Federal Trade Commission thing, and I'm saying, because what they do is they put out stuff to discourage people from trying to maintain privacy, because the public does not make money off people who know their private rights. They only make money off ignorance. So if you're sitting here saying, well, you can't do X, Y, and Z, and this is illegal. Okay, fine. Show me in the code where it's illegal what you're talking about, because I'm going to show you in the code where it says you can require this information from me. And I think it would be remiss of me to not inform my listening audience, because that's an operational presumption that everybody out there is not intelligent enough or astute enough or technically inclined enough to go out and find it. There may be some people who can do it and some people who can't. I don't think that would be fair and a fair assessment, because somebody came to me and gave me information when I was in darkness. And if they made, well, you don't think you're failure, you're ready for it to get no information like this. So, no, you know, so it's like, you know, it's like I got the information, I was able to assimilate it. I actually have been doing this since 1994, and I'm going to give you the books that I got it off of. It was a series of books called The Paper Trip, and they issued by a company called Lupanix back in the day. And people can Google this and see for themselves. But these books are all about teaching people how to maintain privacy. Now, back then, we did view it as someone who was trying to sidestep the legal system or circumvent legal requirements. This is what they tell the public. However, you have a right to privacy. Don't ever forget that. That's what the whole purpose of the Constitution is for. People understand the Constitution for the United States of America is put in place to protect your privacy. So it is important for people to understand what privacy is. Because if you don't understand what privacy is and everything, then you're forever going to be subject. It's not a requirement. I think it's also an error to think that we have to be required to be subject to statutory codes. I think that's not what they're for. Statutory codes are put in place for corporations.
Exactly. Let me moderate a little bit. I can understand both sides of the spectrum where you guys are coming from, and let me tell you which is the way I chose the way I do things. There's a lot of different ways to do things, and on our show and on this network as a whole, we have a variety of different intellectual levels. We have people that can understand when Yousef says, look, private, and they know, because they've spent more time in that area because that area is of interest to them. And then there's people on the call who are novices, who are in their infant stages of this information, and they can be able to understand when Latif says, okay, well, we got to kind of – Latif is more of a entry-level teacher when he's on shows because he feels that most of the people that listen, and a majority may be, not able to – process all the information when we talk public and private. They're not able to process it contemporaneously or simultaneously. So when Yousef says, okay, well, this, that, and then that, yeah, some people on the call that will take that and process that immediately and know what he's talking about. But then there's some people on the call that will need to do more studying. And I always say on this show, research and understand it for yourself until you execute or demonstrate anything. But I also want to say that this is why I've chosen and I've done enough study in this particular arena to where the FASB, sure, applicable law, okay? REMIX, applicable law. Securities and Exchange Commission. We've talked about trust. We talk about TILA. We talk about RESPA. We talk about state law, federal law. This becomes too complex for anybody that's going through an alleged foreclosure to be able to not only get this information, but be able to digest it enough to be able to execute some sort of defense of their property. That's why I know that the consumer protection laws will afford you an easier route, because all of them are debt collectors. None of them are creditors. So when we talk about trust and remix and things of that nature, we can get lost in that. And if you were to go to court, or Yousef or any one of us, or even myself, and I've done securitization audits, and Latif, no, I've done the best.
Yeah.
I've done them for attorneys. Right. So I can go into that real heavy, but that would confuse the hell out of everybody. And you know what? There's going to be something that I'm going to say, or if I was sitting across that attorney, there might be something that he knows that I don't know about securitization. It is much too complex, which is why I say the consumer protection laws, I'm going to build up enough damages. My house is worth $250,000. I'm going to build up enough actual and punitive damages to exceed the amount of $250,000. And I'm going to say, are you willing to write a check for $250,000 plus for my home? If not, you better get lost. I think this condenses our defenses and not make it so complex. But what Youssef said is 100% correct. When we talk about we can go all day, but most of our listeners will get lost in all those different laws when we can just sort of gear it on the consumer protection avenue, and we can stay there, and we've had success doing it. So I understand both
right.
of you guys, you've definitely given a great deal of valuable information from both spectrums. Youssef has calls out there where he goes into the corporate credit and CPN, and it's going to be some listeners that will be like, okay, I'm going to go study that. And then there's going to be some listeners that say, no, I'm going to take it slow. All right, I'm going to learn more before I execute. But both of you gentlemen are definitely correct. The information you're giving is both reaching the intellectual groups that are listening and some of the novices are saying, maybe something worth me researching more. So I respect both of you for providing that information, and I definitely appreciate the intelligent minds that are on. Indeed. We're going to go to caller line. Youssef, stay on. I want to, while you're on the call, I think it's these kind of panels are interesting, and the feedback I get from the listening community is that they would like to see more of a panel of hosts. Myself, yourself, maybe Paul having a show one day to where we're all on the same panel and discuss various topics and issues and have an opportunity to sort of fire questions at us, you know, in a smorgasbord type arena. So I urge you to consider that, maybe put something together. I also want to tell the listeners right now while you're on is that High Frequency Radio Network will be having a seminar, not a webinar. We will be having a seminar and sort of a event coming within the next 60 days. We will make you aware of it. All of the hosts will be there, including other guests, and we're going to give everybody an opportunity to meet with the High Frequency Radio family. We're going to discuss, you know, various topics. It's going to be a very big event. We're going to have many people from this community. I want to say to you, Youssef, I really enjoyed the gentleman, the doctor that was on yesterday. He was one of the best. And that's information that we all need. That was an excellent show. The gentleman was very educated, very informed on the topics of our history. And those are things that are of big interest to me. But people like that will be at our event that High Frequency is going to be putting together. I'll also say that, you know, our network is growing. We're pushing the 40, 50,000 a month limit. That is more than some news stations get, okay, on a monthly basis. So, you know, this type of response and this type of participation from the community makes us, you know, be more responsible, makes Youssef, myself, and Paul dive into the books more, vet our information more, and bring things that the family wants to hear and remedies that the family wants to learn. So I want to say to all of you out there, we appreciate your support. We see the numbers, and trust me, for all of us on him, Youssef and myself, it makes us work harder. The type of emails that I get from the family is unbelievable, the type of support. One thing about our community, if you want to call it a black community, there is nothing more rewarding when you uplift your people. We are the most appreciative people. We are the most honorable people. We are the most supportive people when we are getting what we need. And the emails that I get not only from this country, but from abroad. And Youssef, you will know we're getting a lot of listeners from overseas. Okay, so this information is spreading. Our network is growing, and we're growing, and we're standing up tall trying to make sure that we're bringing you the correct information, bringing you information that will uplift you. And from the responses I'm getting, it's unbelievable. I had a phone call, well, an email from a particular person that was on another network, and he said that the webinars are out there, myself, your webinars, and that, you know, this particular man is an educated man in the securitization arena. He says, Brother Sharif, I go to sleep listening to you and Brother Youssef. This is an Albion gentleman. Youssef's webinars. I want to absorb all that information that you have, and it's so addictive. So, you know, these are compliments, of course, but for people like myself, even Brother Latif and Brother Youssef, it's pressure that we want to make sure that we're bringing the information and we're hitting all intellectual levels, that we're giving enough for the newbies to be able to eat on the information, and we're also feeding the intellectual appetite of people that are more advanced. So being that we have a variety, I try to fluctuate between information by speaking high and low. And that's something that, you know, we're going to continue to do and speak to all levels. But I don't necessarily get on my call thinking that everyone is a novice. You know, I try to speak to people in simplicity terms and try to keep the information kind of mid-range. But I don't want to make it too low and too high. But I think all of us do a great job, Latifah, on your show, Fix Your Mortgage Mess, and Yousef on your shows. I think we hit all the levels that we need to hit, and for those that need more, you know, we have a form of communication, which is email, and those questions are able to be answered. So I appreciate both of you gentlemen. We're going to go to the call lines. I'm going to leave both of your lines open, and we're going to try to answer some questions for the community here. All right, let's go to 412-1568. We got 45 minutes left. 412-1568, you're on High Frequency Radio. Do you have a question?
Yes, sir. How you doing today?
Doing well. How are you?
Oh, good. The show is powerful. Very good show.
I was
like more interested in, as far as your approach when you were saying about these here foreclosures. Because what's the other brother's name? He was citing a case from, I believe, Georgia.
Abdul Latif.
Now, from listening to yourself and Yousef also, court rulings are saying that these assignments, they could be this, they could be that. You know, the alleged borrower is not entitled to this, the child is that. But in the language, I'm looking in all these court cases that says all that, it always says bank. It never says debt collector. Every last single one of them. And being as though they're all debt collectors.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead, brother.
All the cases says bank, or, you know, it says bank or creditor. It never says third-party debt collectors.
Right. And that's why the information that's on the show will help you be able to identify what are you doing. It's always going to say bank. Why? Because they want to continue the roast that you owe some bank or some bank is in the picture. They're using the bank and the mortgagee creditor-related laws to try to continue the fraud that you are somehow obligated to some banking association when you are not. It's never going to say debt collector, okay, because they are piggybacking off of documentation, although erroneous and defective, that says bank. And the easiest thing for one to do is to go to court and mention a name brand banking institution. Okay, that's what attorneys are going to do it. Now, come in court and say Bubba John and Aunt Sandra's debt collection agency and try to take a house and see what kind of response you get. I think Pookie would even challenge you on that. But come in court and say U.S. Bank or Bank of America, now there's some credibility with the name. So it's up to you with the information that we provide on the show and the information that is out there for you to be able to identify yourself what you're dealing with. You're not dealing with a bank in most cases. So when we talk about laws, I don't really follow all those laws, Tiller, RESPA, all those. You know, all those are cute. Okay, they're $1,000, a couple $1,000. You really don't have any actual damages, no punitive damages, no general damages, no consequence of damages, nothing. You go in there, you get $1,000 or $2,000 if the court agrees with you, and then what? And then you're sitting up there making the court believe that you think you're dealing with a creditor or a mortgagee, and you're not. So the clear thing I tell them, and I say this all the time, you're not a creditor. Don't send me that form. That's a deceptive practice. You're not a creditor. So I take the assignment, which is prima facie evidence that you're a debt collector, because the assignment is going to have what? It's going to have deceptive information saying that a bank did it, right? Well, we know a bank didn't do the assignments, okay? And then secondly, it's going to determine what? What date that debt collector came in possession of the alleged debt. And most of the time, that is going to be after you were in default. So they are clearly governed under the FDCPA and your state consumer protection laws. That's all I need. That's all I need to extrapolate from an assignment is who you are. I know the rest is hogwash. I've been around. Latif can tell you. We can get laws passed on assignments and everything else until you start determining that you're not dealing with a creditor. You're dealing with a debt collector. They're going to continue to play games with these titles until you yourself know for yourself that, look, the bank is gone. Youssef just discussed it. I just discussed it. These trusts, these REMICs that are coming after you saying they own some interest in your property, we all know that no proper documentation did not make it to that trust, okay? So what can I take out of that to give to the community that's very simple and plain? If your loan was sold by an originator to a depositor, which is the avenue of securitization, okay, then the originator was paid. Let's say you took out a mortgage with Bank of America. Bank of America sold it to the depositor via the secondary market into the securitization. Okay? Bank of America then got a check for that loan. That's all I need to know. Okay? That's all I need to know is that Bank of America, who is going to turn back around, they're going to do a U-turn in the road, and they're going to go back and say, okay, we sold that to the depositor. They sold it into the securitization, sold it to the investors. Now we're going to double back, and we're going to go and take the house saying that we're still the creditor. That's all I need to know. I don't need to learn the pooling and service agreement. I don't need to know anything else. Was that my question to Bank of America is, one, were you paid for this loan in any way? Yes, you were. You were paid by the depositor, right? Okay, that's all I need to know. You're a debt collector. You were paid. Most of your mortgage language, your deed of trust language says that upon payment, it didn't say by the borrower, and I use the example, when you take your car to a dealership and you trade it in for another, okay, the bank, the dealership pays off your loan if you have a balance. Anybody can pay off that loan. I can go write a check, okay? That don't mean I get the title, okay, unless I have you sign a document saying the title can be given to me. So my point is that if the mortgage document says that upon payment of the mortgage, you have to issue a satisfaction of mortgage, and most of those deeds and security deeds has language in it pertaining to that. So you were paid. You didn't give me a satisfaction of mortgage. The documentation didn't make it to the REMIC, okay? You're a debt collector. You're trying to collect a debt that does not exist, okay? And that's a violation of almost every provision as it relates to consumer protection laws. That's what I try to bring to the family in its simplicity to make it narrow enough for you to say, get on this road, okay? Go ahead and sue for your actual damages, which would be the amount of the home if they did a wrongful foreclosure, which is a tort claim, okay, and bring your action that way and be like, look, they sold my $250,000 home, and they're a debt collector. First of all, they're not entitled to that, all right? They're not entitled to real property, 15 U.S.C. 1692I. If they want to bring that action, they have to bring it judicially, and if they bring that type of action against me, I will make them crawl up a tree and want to just rot to death. This is what I'm trying to bring to the community, to take the information that Brother Youssef provides, to take the information that Brother Latif has provided and its complexity and kind of reduce it down, blend it up, and say, okay, family, all of that, I know about all of that information. Let me kind of translate into how strategically you should pursue this, because you're not going to be able to learn the FSAB. You're not going to be able to learn federal law. You're not going to be able to learn all your state laws. You're not going to be able to learn all the mortgage laws. You're not going to be able to learn that. And that attorney is going to murder you on one of those things. He's going to make you look like a doofus because he's going to be able to talk about things that you can't respond to. But if you study the FDCPA and the FCRA, which are not that difficult, then now you have an opportunity to level the playing field.
But let me ask you this real quick. I know you got other callers on there. Well, or two, I had sent you two people who wanted to get your webinars on the Fair Debt Collection Practices Act. They said you didn't respond back to them, but you are the lawmaster44@yahoo.com. Is that correct?
That's correct. That's correct. I respond to mostly all my emails. Some of them, you know, if they're short and in length, you know, I can respond to them. But as far as the webinar go, I respond to all of those emails. And let me just say this while you're on that, brother. Excuse me a minute. We did have an issue with one of the codecs with a Go meeting. some of you were not able to open up the webinar, we do have the codec for you, so that webinar will play. And I have transferred it into an MP3, so it's easier for those that had difficulties using it. But if you don't, if you're not able to open any webinar, please send me an email, and I'll definitely send you the codec, which will allow you to play it. But, yes, go ahead, brother.
Okay, what I'll do is I have them email you again. Now, as far as you were saying, you know, as far as what you were just saying, I believe in most of these, it might be paragraph 20 or 24 when it's speaking about once the mortgage is paid, you should get a release of lien from that lender.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of people, they argue about the note this and note that. But
that's right.
Being as though the note was cashed, you know, under UCC 3, I think it's 104D, it's saying that it's cash, okay? And you can, I mean, and it's in a demand deposit account. Now, Brother Lateef was talking about check cashing systems. I need to know if it's in a demand deposit account, because when they finally do a foreclosure, they'll file a 1099A, so you abandon the property. How do you find that demand deposit account from that that transaction when they cash that promissory note? Would Brother Lateef be able to tell me that, or would you know that?
I'll let him see if he can answer that. Brother Lateef?
Okay. Are you saying when there's a foreclosure, this is what you, I'm going to make sure the question is correct. When there's a foreclosure and
not the account, at closing, I'm talking about, once that promissory note is cashed, okay, and you made a deposit in a financial institution, okay, it's a transaction account or a demand deposit account, and they file Form 8300 as a cash deposit. Now, that account is somewhere with your name on it. They basically open the account in your name. Now, that account should be somewhere out there, but I haven't had anybody to tell me how do you locate that account, because there's an account number somewhere with it.
Well, here's the extent of my knowledge on that research, okay?
Okay.
A lot of these loans were already credit lines were already pre-established. For example, Deutsche Bank, and this is a tricky game that they play, Deutsche Bank, a national trust company, will probably issue a line of credit to some lender to make so many loans. And then when those loans are then funded, quote-unquote funded, the notes are brought back into the mortgage pool. So at that time, it's deposited. Now, the UCC law, 9102 subsection, it should be 66 or 68, says that a promissory note is not a deposit into any bank. It's only a promissory note. So what happens is that whole securitization process or that whole transaction started off as what you call Article 3, but then it got converted into a secure transaction under Article 9. And
when you say Article 3 and 9, Lateef, you're speaking of the Uniform Commercial Code. I just wanted to let the community
know.
That's correct.
Okay. So it started off as a negotiable instrument, as a note, but then got converted into a 9 transaction without any disclosure to the fact. Okay? So what ends up happening is that the note itself is purportedly to be deposited by the securitizer, actually sold to the securitizer, who then deposited into the trust. Now, that's sort of off-grid. That whole transaction is sort of off-grid. And that's the difficulty that you're having. One of the things you do want to look for, though, is this. Notice that your loan number will be one thing, and they'll start servicing you off of a new account number. Well, that presupposes that they have paid off your original loan number and created a new loan number for the purposes of servicing. But there's no documentation associated with that account number to any of the bona fide documents. For example, when you're talking about manufacturing, what happens, there's a strict accounting process, okay? At the manufacturer, if it's a computer, if it's a car, whatever, the manufacturer starts off with a manufacturer
model number and identification number. In cars, it's called VIN number. Okay, so you know the exact date of which plant it was manufactured, which dealership it was sold to, and who ended up being the purchaser. Now, you drive that car for 4 or 5 years, you sell it. That VIN number doesn't change. It's illegal to change that VIN number. Okay? Now, in mortgages, they're supposed to follow the same type of financial accounting. You start off with the original account number, and it should be tracked the same way. But at some point in time, they start canceling that original account number, which under financial accounting means that that debt has been discharged. And that's
right.
Where you probably have to start getting IRS records to run down the pipe and say, here's my original account number. What has happened to that? Because what they're reporting is another account number associated with your property.
And let me just add in one thing.
Yeah, they
right.
never
let
want
me add to.
To
that.
Go ahead.
Latif, let me add to that, and then you can pick up, and then we have to go to the next caller. This is why I say check your credit reports, check your correspondence and your Dunning letters. And many times these debt collectors will create their own account number. I will immediately, if you know what you're doing, sue them and say produce a contract enumerated by that account number. If you do not, you're going to write me a check. And I'm telling you, for every one of these accounts, they will have a different account number on there. And if you cannot produce a contract with that account number on there, you got yourself a pretty winnable case.
Wow, that's deep. That's heavy. That's heavy right there.
That's how I do it, brother. They're going to do that all the time. They're always going to get you. So how are you going to change an account number? Tell me what happened with the other account. You know, you can't go into the bank and say, look, I want to go ahead and open this other account. Everybody, like, are you open a second account? Nah, I just want to close out that other one, right? You got to close out the other one and open up a new one. So I would ask the debt collector, I don't know what this account number represents. I've never executed a document with that account number on there. I need you to validate or verify that alleged debt with that account number and produce the contract enumerated by that number. Okay? Right there, you got them. Okay?
Right.
But, you know, you have to look for those tricks, because if they turn around, because the servicers are most of the banks, if you got one of the major national banks, many times they won't change the account number. I think they all do, Latif, but a lot of the accounts and statements that I see, they usually still stay in accord with the previous account number. But many times if you're dealing with the debt collectors, and I'm talking about the mom and pop, Bubba Smith and them collection companies, they will definitely almost always change the account number. And they report that new account number to the credit bureau.
Let me also say this, is when they, and I want to support something that you said just a few minutes ago on this issue about servicing, switching account numbers and everything else. And there was a recent ruling came down in a recommendation by a magistrate judge in the U.S. District Court. And one of the things that you really want to key on, too, is that if their records say that you're in deficit, but you were in deficit when it was transferred to them, they are a debt collector under the FDCPA. So
right.
It's very, very key to trigger off the fact, well, when did you acquire this, okay?
That's right.
And ask the question, when did the account become delinquent, okay? Because basically they're testifying against themselves at that point in time.
That's right.
That they're not a creditor, they're a debt collector. Okay?
That's right.
There was a recent ruling that came down on this that was duly noted by the magistrate court. That, yeah, you are a debt collector. This is Bank of America involved in this on FHA law. Yeah, you are a debt collector, okay, because you acquired that debt after it was already delinquent.
Now, once that happens, Latif, this is what I try to explain to the community in order for me, which is what I try to do is to translate, is – we can't learn about all those other mortgagee-related forms. If we can just bring them to the point of identity, Who are you? You're a debt collector? Gotcha. That's what Brother Sharif teaches me. Let me go on and learn these 10 pages on the FDCPA so I can find out how to get you to write me a check. Because I don't have to learn all that REMIC, that securitization, secondary market, the FSAB, the federal. I don't need to do all that. I can listen to Brother Sharif's show and then figure out how much of a check they're going to write me. You got me, brother?
I got you.
All right. Okay, brother, I appreciate your time, man. We're going to go to the next caller. We got 24 minutes left in the live stream. We're going to go to the next call. Let's go to I've seen a little bit of California, and I love my California people. Let me see if I can get some California in here. No, California done left. All right. Let's go to 618-618-1858. You're on High Frequency Radio. Do you have a question?
Yes, I do. I do have a question. Okay, I'm going to the FDCPA and dealing with a foreclosure, I do have one question. What webinar would be sufficient for me to get so I can learn a little bit more about that?
Sure. You can go back to you actually, brother, can go back to the first two webinars I did covers the FDCPA. And then also you can listen to the first three to four shows. The first three shows when Yousef had me on as a guest, I kind of went in from front to back on the FDCPA. That'll be an easier route for you to listen to those shows starting in, I believe, November. But then if you wanted to get into the webinars to where I break down everything from front to back, then the first two webinars, one and two, would cover that topic of the FDCPA.
Okay. All right. That's all I wanted to know. Thanks a lot, brother.
Brother. Appreciate your call, man, and I appreciate you taking an interest in your education.
Thank you.
Thank you. All right. Let's go to 469-669-6123-6123-469. You're on High Frequency Radio. Do you have a question?
Yes, I do. My question is, first of all, good afternoon. Thank you for taking my call. Good afternoon to your guests as well. I guess my first question would be is how long are we going to continue to serve this idol god known as the United States, knowing that everything about it is actually false or artificial, but yet still we continue to serve it? How long are we going to do this?
That's a good question, brother. And you know what? I stopped serving it a long time ago. What I decided to do was just learn how to live within it comfortably by getting these debt collectors to write me some checks. But I don't praise anything about the United States. I think the time has come to where everybody is learning that this whole country is mostly relying upon fraud. Everything is a lie. You know, I listen to these politicians. I listen to these representatives, man, and years ago I used to listen and be like, wow. Now I listen and I just laugh because, I mean, there is nothing that this government or these agencies can say to correct the abuses that's been going on in this country for thousands of years. But especially since I've come into my awareness, I realize now that it's no sense of crying about it. Find a way within the system to be comfortable, okay, and being able to protect yourself, being able to relieve yourself from debt, and being able to turn some debt into an asset, to me, makes it a little bit more comfortable for me to deal with the country. So that's a good question, Latif. You got anything to add to that?
Well, you know, I think I kind of just agree with you in general there. I think also, that, you know, I've got a big thing about there's sort of a conflict that we have here. We know that there are laws, but there's not justice. And this is the whole problem that we have. We've got laws, we don't have justice. We don't have enforcement many times of what should be there. So the people behind the so-called justice are very suspect. So what we're doing is, in essence, we're trying to navigate and finesse the system because it's not really our system. And until there's an alternative system, that's what we're doing. We're left with trying to navigate and come to some type of best resolution for the time being.
Yeah, brother, but I'm with you. I appreciate that question, man, and I think that's a – I'm sorry?
Can I ask one more question?
Sure, go ahead.
Okay, I guess my next question would be then, because is it a condition, I guess, a spiritual condition when we say, well, we need to work with this and navigate through it? Is it because of our own idolatry and thinking what we're going to lose if we walk away from this? Or are we so scared that it might not be anything on the other end that, well, I'd rather live in this lie than walk in the truth?
Well, brother, I mean, that's a good question too, and I think you're right about that. I think I can definitely speak to that and say that, yeah, I think there's fear. But let me say this: I came on this show about 2 months ago. All right, I hadn't been a public speaker other than with Brother Latif. I help host his show, but collectively, this network is reaching 30,000 to 40,000 listeners per month, brother. The wave is coming. Okay, people are not showing up on these shows because they believe in the system anymore. People who have been abused by the system, they want a way out. We're putting it together. We're in a lab. High Frequency Radio Network is a lab. It is a scientific lab. We are figuring things out. We are bringing resources to the community. We are experimenting with things, and we are demonstrating some things. The change is coming, my brother, with 30,000, 40,000 people just on this network. Just on this network, and there's others out there doing the same, brother. They're running scared. I can tell you that the politicians and everything else, everything is collapsing with the information age, with your WikiLeaks, with your anonymous guy, with your Edward Snowden's. You understand what I mean, brother? It's collapsing. I mean, you have to see that nobody is believing in this nonsense anymore. With that amount of people, the unemployment situation, brother, put people here. That's why 30,000, 40,000 people are here, because the economy is so messed up, so screwed up. The government is messed up, our society so bad that people have time to study now. They can't get work. They got debt collectors. They got the legal society beating them up. They got the court system beating them up. People are getting tired. They're taking pen to book, and they're like, I got to figure out a way. So, brother, I think the time is really very short for all of this nonsense to go on. And I think those that have created this nonsense is on their way to making sure their parachute works.
And I wasn't talking about you or your guests directly, but to go back with what you just said, well, people have a lot of time now to study. Well, what if they start hiring again and these same people get a job? Okay, now they're getting a job, now their bills are being met. Because, see, the only reason why, to be honest with you, the only reason why a lot of us get into stuff like this is something has to happen to us, right?
Yeah.
So if this guy's real smart, he'll say, well, you know what? What if I give these people jobs and keep the illusion going? You see what I'm saying? Now it still becomes a condition of the heart. Well, now you're
because
now you can go and you can get those things that you lust after or that are your idols. Now there's not a problem dealing with the system. It's only when the system is not giving me milk for my family or I can't suck off of it, then I have a problem with it.
Right. You make an interesting point, my brother, and I agree with you on that. But this is what I think is going to happen, one or two things. Sure, if the government starts to pacify the people and give them jobs, some of us, okay, out there will run and get those jobs. They're either going to take the information they learn on this network from all three of the hosts on this network and apply it, although they decided to participate in intercourse in the commercial world, or I think many people have gotten to the point, my brother, to where they don't want nothing to do with any government hand. They don't want the jobs. They're going to create their own businesses. They're going to do like Youssef say. They're going to create their trust. They're going to create their privacy. They're going to build an economic wall around themselves, and they're just going to be on offense for any debt collector or any other person that tries to fumble with their economic stability. I think that's what's going to happen. I think this is a perfect time and example for us to realize we need to create our own economy. We need to create our own jobs. We need to be our own business people. Our public schools don't ever teach you that. They teach us how to be good slaves, how to go to school for 8 years to ask somebody for a job. I don't see how anybody can go to school 8 years and fill out an application. When you have the Indians and you have the foreigners that learn business when they're in the 10th and 11th grade. Do you understand? So, brother, I think the change is here, and I think many people have been forced to go out there and forage for themselves, and I think even the government opened up the floodgates. First of all, they're still trying to fight about giving minimum wage, making minimum wage $10.10 an hour. Your president wants to make the federal minimum wage $10.10, and you have a bunch of idiots up there saying, "Well, we don't think it should be $10.10." I mean, how much profit do your company needs to make while the people can't even pay their bills? Like for people that would go back out there into that market and deal with a company that doesn't think enough of you to pay you more than $7 or $8 an hour, I don't know what's going to wake you up. Okay, but those of you that don't wake up and want to go work for $8, $9 an hour, go right ahead. We're going to need some people to collect the trash, to pick up the garbage, to do the work, to mine the fields. I mean, you're always going to have people that just is going to stay comfortable where they are, and I don't think that's going to change. And we need that. You know, we do need people that are willing to do those things. So, brother, it's a good question. I appreciate it. I'm going to try to go to another caller, but, man, come on the show tomorrow and pose that question to Yousef, because I'd like to get more into an in-depth discussion about that. It's preparing our community to be self-employed, okay?
Thank you, brother. Thank you for taking my call.
Thank you, brother. Peace to you. Thank you. All right, let's go to 704-2642. I believe that's North Carolina. You're on High Frequency Radio. Do you have a question?
Hello?
Hello, you're on the air.
Yeah, hey, Brother Sharif, good to hear your voice today. Man, I've been meaning to get in touch with you. I have a question pertaining to the FDCPA webinar a couple months ago, and here's the dilemma I'm in. I'm asking you, is it too late for me to go into small claims if I've already gone to, you know, gone through the process in foreclosure in federal court and it was dismissed, and I'm gone through the process of defending my property in state court, that is still an appealable issue. However, in state court, I went and sued them as a debt collector under the North Carolina Debt Collection Act, and mm-hmm. They're at the lawyer's at a point where he's trying to do a motion to dismiss my appeal where there has been no appeal. But I'm asking, is it too late since I've gone through those other two courts to go into the small claim and get a ruling on them as being a debt collector? And if so, would that benefit me in any way at this point?
Yeah, sister, sounds like you know, and honors to you for at least going out there and trying to do things to protect your home. Sounds like you've done a lot of things. Maybe you wasn't completely educated on what you were doing. Sounds like you tried a few different venues and you wasn't successful in doing that. I'm going to have a show, not next Tuesday, but the Tuesday following, and I'm going to have a very astute bankruptcy person on. And I'm bringing this to the community because there are ways for us to utilize the bankruptcy court to deal with a lot of these matters, as opposed to be bouncing around from different courts and trying to different procedures and processes. And I don't mean that literally, but different ways of demonstrating your entitlement to your home. So I'm going to bring this guy on, and he's going to teach the community on how to use the bankruptcy system, the adversarial complaint system, and the homestead exemption system to deal with a lot of these situations all in one venue. What I like about the bankruptcy court is that it brings everybody to one party. Okay, I don't have to bounce around, go to state court, go to federal court, go down to small claims court, do this. I can bring everybody in one forum inside the bankruptcy court, and there are many tools. And this gentleman, along with myself, will discuss some of the benefits of bankruptcy court when it's done properly. Okay, I'll be honest with you. I think the bankruptcy court in many ways is the safest venue for you to deal with these things. I've seen some trustees that are not worth a damn, and I've seen many of them that pretty much do what they're supposed to do. There are a lot of tools. This is another arena that we need to dive into. There are a lot of tools in bankruptcy, if done properly, that you can deal with all of those matters there and play offense later. But since it sounds like maybe you might be up against some res judicata, meaning that you've already had some rulings that was adverse to your success, that you probably cannot go and replead, okay? So I think maybe at this point just email me and I can refer you to someone that will be able to help you put together a bankruptcy, and maybe you can go in there and be able to discharge some of those obligations and do an adversary proceeding to determine the validity of any lien that they may be claiming. I think that will be the best route. But Tuesday after next, show will be on. Mm-hmm.
Okay, I've already done a bankruptcy and an adversary proceeding back in 2010 when it was the HOA coming after the property, and I got rid of that and the attorney from that standpoint. But now, you know, of course, now it's the supposed servicer. So even though I've already filed a bankruptcy, is it still too
Well, depending on when you filed it in 2010, you do have the ability to file another bankruptcy. Again, it's on an individual basis. So I think that show would be good for you. Or what I would tell you, sister, is maybe you need to seek a bankruptcy attorney and see what options you have there to sort of finish off. Because if you filed a bankruptcy in 2010, many times I'll tell you this. This is why I say we try to bring the information and education so that you'll know what your attorney is supposed to do. Because if you don't know, you're going to be in this situation. If you went through a bankruptcy and there are some alleged creditors or debt collectors that you did not deal with, your attorney or you did not do a proper bankruptcy. We go into bankruptcy court, we have this information that's out there by people say, oh, file a bankruptcy and that'll be the end of your problems. That is not the case. You have to utilize the bankruptcy tools to the maximum in order for you to come out there, get a haircut and be like, okay, I got all that taken care of, all right? I got all that discharge. I dealt with, you know, debt collectors. I dealt with the creditors. Now I'm going to get my fresh start. Now I have an education behind me. Now I've listened to the webinars and the shows. Now I know how to have intercourse with the commercial world and as a consumer, a responsible consumer, I know what to do and what to look for and not to do. So I think you might be a candidate for that, sister. You know, email me. I may be able to lead you to some people or be on the lookout for that show, which will probably help you to know when you go hire an attorney what he is supposed to do. I will share this story with you, and we have 7 minutes left to the live stream. If you want to remain on the call, you need to call into the number after the 7 minutes. You will not be able to get in. But I'll share with you a story of a group that I had done a seminar for in Ohio, and most of the people that showed up there had done bankruptcies through a specific bankruptcy attorney. And what was happening was this attorney, unbeknownst to the consumers, to the debtors, they were filing abandonment of property. Okay. Understand, when you hire that attorney, he has power of attorney to execute things sometimes with your knowledge, sometimes without. We know that one of the deficiencies of the legal society is effective communication. We know they don't let you know. They don't return calls. They don't let you know what's going on. They don't give you a copy of your filings. You have to make sure you have to keep this attorney in their lane, just like you have to read the local rules and the federal rules and make sure you keep that judge in his lane. You need to know the rules before you can hire anybody. Okay, so you are not taken advantage of. This particular attorney was doing abandonment claims, basically giving the homes back to the bank. And they were all African-American people. Okay, so these are things that some attorneys will do. Okay, and I have my personal belief that many of them work in cahoots with the banks and other companies to let these communities know, to let these LLCs and these trusts know, hey, I got another one I did an abandonment on. That'll be going to sale. You should scoop that one up, okay? So, you know, there is those type of situations that are going on. This is why we try to bring information from different arenas into this forum so everybody can know a little bit or choose to study more on the topics that relate to them personally. All right, sister? But I think you need to look into that and give me an email after the show, and I'll try to lead you in the right direction.
Okay, thank you so much.
All right, thank you, sister. Take care. All right, let's go to 317-317-1342. You're on High Frequency Radio. Do you have a question?
Yes. On the webinar, the ones you said the first two, how do you get to that the webinars? What is the
You'll have to email me. You'll have to email me, and then it'll be sent to you. It's done by email.
Okay. Okay.
Yes, sir.
And that's lawmass44.
Yes, sir.
What is it? .com.
No, the lawmaster44 at yahoo.com.
Yeah, lawmaster. Okay.
Yes, sir.
Now, the other question, I got a question on what that young man was saying a little bit earlier. And, you know, that if he read, you know, that's why we need to know our history, too, in this country. Because I believe it was Nixon and a couple of other presidents that pulled that during the Black Panther Party time when all of us was trying to rise up to the occasion to deal with the situations in our community all across the country. And J. Edgar Hoover strategically took and undermined all the black so-called power bases to put the fear in the people that once you try to rise up to do something for yourself, this is what we're going to do to you. And this is a fear that has been put in us, and the gatekeepers, they keep this fear. These politicians and these so-called ministers and these civic leaders that's in our community, they do not want us to raise up and become independent and do for self. They want us to be the permanent underclass and be the gophers for these corporations. So when they bring the so-called foreigners over here to do business, they put a glass between us, take our money, and then kick us back out like we trash. And this is something that we have to overcome. We got to understand that and overstand the fact that we got to get an education. The education that Yusuf, yourself, Lotsi, Savage, everybody, look, this education is priceless. This education is dealing with emotion. This education is dealing with the hidden, the things that's behind the scenes that we couldn't see and couldn't possibly see, because in the English language, it is a communicative language of deceit. And but now it's just ridiculous that we were never told these things. And they put these things in front of us in our face and make jokes at us in the movies, in the music, in different advertisements on commercials, and they telling what they're doing to us, but they know we don't have the perception and the understanding to catch it. So what y'all's doing is breaking the spell of English grammar and hundreds of years of deceit. So we as a people got to stop being handicapped. We need to come on and get with y'all, get the information, support it, and do what we got to do. Because like you said, you got people outside the country listening to these webinars and these talk shows, and they are benefiting because most of them is in their right mind as far as nationality, birthright. They know who they are. They know what's happening, and they just need a little edge. Where we got to come up from the grave of just decades, years of just being in a grave. We got to come up out of that grave of ignorance. But I just want to ask, when we do this vast trust for the communities all across this country, that will this vast trust, when I understand it from what y'all saying about trust, that it will counter the corporations to the point that they will literally have to pack up and go back to Europe or wherever they came from? That's my question.
Brother, you know, you bring up some excellent points. I can't even add to some of the things that you said because they were all right and exact. I will say this. I've seen the effect that this network is having on the community at large. And the information, as you said, and we're not in our own horns here, but the information that this network gives out, along with Brother Latif, who on his own network blesses the community with information that you will get nowhere, is invaluable. I mean, it is
right.
Absolutely a part. It needs to be woven into your daily activities. And this is the information that I've chose to spend my time on because it provides an uplifting economically to the community. We have to get money. We have to get debt off of us, and we have to get money. Because if you don't have money, you're not going to have any power. If you don't have economic, you don't have power. If you don't know law, you're not going to have any power. Once we get the money and we learn the law, now they won't be putting us underneath of the immigrants. Okay, and nothing
right.
against the immigrants, but we're being treated below immigrants, and this is our country, our land, and they treat
That's
us like
right.
we're wet food stamps. So this network is responsible, and people, and this it's contagious. I mean, we're overseas, we're in other countries. People are unifying to be able to understand what's going on and to be able to execute our remedy, and it's happening. But brothers like you. Now, staying up on the information, some people is going to remain asleep, okay, but until we get this debt up off of us, because we all know that's one of the biggest restraints that we have on us, are these debts.
Right.
If we're able to free
that's
that
right.
up and keep our real property, they have to listen to us. Now, I don't know if you
right.
remember when the immigration situation was going on, but there was a whole lot of talk about deporting and all that, and I don't know who the immigrants, the Mexicans and whatnot, talked to. Sound like they might have talked to Moore or somebody, but they started firing off some indigenous language to these people talking about, who's the foreigner? Who are the damn foreigners? Who are you talking to? And you know what? The government went absolutely quiet when they started talking the real indigenous, historical, esoterical information, and they started learning from somebody that knew that they're really not foreigners, that the foreigners
right.
are... We know who the foreigners are.
Right.
So there was silence for a long time from the government on this immigration stuff. And then you still got little politicians rearing their head talking about, yeah, we believe in people earning their citizenship. I'm just like, y'all need to go back to wherever you came from because I don't know.
Right.
What are you talking about earning some citizenship here? What are you talking about? You're on stolen land. So, listen, brother, I think this community, yourself and others that are on this call, are making our best effort to even the playing field. And until our
right.
melanated community, man, comes together and start doing things privately and knowing how to have intercourse publicly, we're not going to get anywhere. This is where they're beating us. They will come and
right.
kiss our feet when we have that economic stability and our knowledge of law. And both of those avenues are available to us just on this network.
Thank you, brother. Sure.
Thank you, brother. Brother Latif,
wow.
you have something to add to that?
Well, I think we're going to have to spend some time dealing with the spiritual decision of Exodus. You know, should some of us consider exiting this society just like the children, the Hebrewites did from Pharaoh when oppression and other things got so catastrophic that it made better sense for them to establish their own land. So that's a topic that I think that needs to be approached at some point in time because at some point in time, some of the elders, some of the states, our leaders must bring insight as to when is enough or should we be considering an Exodus strategy?
That's right. You know, I had a discussion I'll just share with you with this particular task force that's been asking me, like Tifa told you about, to come work with them. They want to deem me the quarterback. And I handled a couple of cases for them. They wanted me to demonstrate how I would handle certain cases. And they were quite surprised to see a layman, okay, be able to educate them or demonstrate to them how one handles litigation. And I look at it and I be like, well, I studied books just like you did. I mean, I read the same books. I heard Yousef say on a call the other day, he said, I don't know why people, you know, hold people that got certificates or degrees to a higher degree than somebody who reads the same books. Like, I read the same book. I mean, and somebody made a reference that, you know, I think the doctor did, said that, well, you know, just because you have a license don't mean you know what you're doing. There are car accidents out there by people that have driver's license. There are malpractice suits by doctors who have physician licenses, okay? There are police officers that shoot people when they're not supposed to, and they're supposed to have certification as a law enforcement. License don't mean jack. You can learn that law. You need to learn the law. And when you understand that the things that are oppressing you are in a book, we should all have reading glasses, and we should be reading, and we should be studying so that we understand. We know that the traffic situation is a trillion-dollar industry. We should be studying traffic laws. Paul Savage does that. You have that avenue. You know that if you stop and you ask for a couple of $100 because you were speeding 5 miles over the speed limit, you now have a defense to that. We discuss debt on this show, so you can deal with debt ranging from a dollar to $1 million, depending on what type of real property, what type of credit card. So you have that avenue. Then you have Yousef discussing on a variety of topics, law, trust, privacy, taxes, things of that nature. If you can remove yourself the tax abuse, the debt abuse, and the traffic abuse, let me tell you something. You want to talk about rich and wealthy? That's what you're going to be. Because if we are able to take those things away from the government, who is abusing those things, and we know that what they're doing is illegal, now we're a whole lot lighter. We got some weights off of our back. We're able to put some money, keep some money in our pocket, put some money in our pocket, and go completely on offense and take some money out of their pockets. And that's what these shows are here for. And I think we're making a good concerted effort to accomplish those things. All right. Thank you for the question, brother. We're going to go to the next call. Let's go to 267-3742. 267-3742. You're on High Frequency Radio. Do you have a question?
Yes, Islam, brother. How are you doing?
Islam, sister, how are you, queen?
Okay, wonderful, wonderful. I just have three little short questions. One is definitely short. One, I wanted to check with Latif to find out, does his show start 7 o'clock Eastern Standard Time? Is one question.
Yes, ma'am.
The other, okay, it is 7. Okay, the other question is, when you were speaking about your name being your intellectual property earlier, along with when you're getting in contact with the credit bureaus to order your credit report, and what they do over the phone, they tape you, they ask you if this is your legal name, and they ask you for all that information, which is kind of understandable, in order to send you the credit report. So how would you address both of those issues about the name being your intellectual property and when contacting the credit bureau for getting your credit reports?
You know, that's a good question, sister, and I would say there's a balance between security, okay, and your intellectual property, your private information. In order, you don't just want anybody. I can understand to an extent certain questions that has to be asked by entities to verify or validate whether you are who you say you are. Okay, so you know, with that said, if I need to obtain a credit report and I know in that credit report it lies some money for me, I will give you whatever information you want because I need the credit report. For me, a credit report is a paycheck, okay? So I'll tell you whatever it is you need to know. I'll give you my intellectual property and everything. I need my report. You got that report, and that report has some money in it, and I need to get it. It's an asset. So I'm going to tell you my name. I'll tell you my, you know, my social slave number, my date of birth, if you want to deem it a date of birth. I'll give you that information because I need the report. So, you know, when it comes to that, go ahead and give them the information to get your report. If you need to call and find out about something or dispute something, go ahead and give them the information. What we're trying to do is rectify the situation, clean it up. Okay, and then from that point on, once we've cleaned it up and we've regurgitated or reinstituted our consumer purchasing power, now we're going to close it down and be like, okay, well, when you call me and ask you for that information, you're not getting it. Well, I don't want you to report that information. I don't want you reporting anything. Okay, I've cleaned this up. I've taken care of my debts. I've taken care of my legitimate debts. I've gotten rid of the illegitimate debts. It's time for me now to shut it down and go more private. Okay, and use an EIN or CPN number because I'm not going to get into this fix again. So what I can tell you is that don't take the information when we say literally. If you have a debt collector calls you and they're trying to verify information, I wouldn't tell them anything. But if you need to call the credit bureau who has that information that you need or you need something from them, they need to verify that you're who you say you are. You don't want Joe Blow calling and getting that information. So there is a level of security that goes with anything and everything. And I don't want people to misconstrue what I'm saying by don't give anybody any information. You have to be smart about it, and you have to give it to someone who you know is secure to a point to where you're getting something in return, something that you need, okay?
Okay, one last question. So have you done anything in particular or suggest that people do when you get back to protecting your name as intellectual property? How do you go about that? I mean, do you do some kind of procedure, some kind of paperwork or whatever? Personally?
Well, Chief, you want to address that? That's a good question for you.
Please restate the question so I can...
She said, is there any way you can go about protecting your intellectual property, such as your name, in the future?
Well, yes, you can. Matter of fact, you know the gentleman, too, Jehoshaphat, who's a co-host. He actually took his name, and you can copyright your name, and he did an international copyright on it, okay? But, yeah, you can. You can copyright your name. And so anyone who uses your name now become under your control. You can also send notices out to that effect, okay, that your name, that you own your name. You can make certain filings, not necessarily international, but statewide. You can put together an affidavit and file it with the Secretary of State that your name is private, privilege belong to you, and it is certified, and that you preserve that name to be yours. Okay.
Now
one thing that goes on in this whole straw man argument is that your name is left out of, when you were given a birth certificate. The live birth person never came to claim the instrument or the name. So you can recoup that under UCC, UCC Article 305, that you can go in and recoup it because when those instruments were assigned, you were in infancy, and now you're coming back to reclaim it.
Sister, let me say this to you, and I don't want you to misconstrue what I'm saying and what Brother Latif is saying even. We don't teach you how to run away from commercial intercourse. We teach you how to be more responsible. I'm not one of those people that say, get rid of this, get rid of that, turn in your job. Listen, if you learn the law, you will learn how to perform within those instruments properly. You don't have to get rid of anything. There's a benefit to all of it. Now, when you do intercourse with these banks and these other institutions, within that paperwork has some sort of a waiver or some sort of a clause that says that they can report that information to these credit reporting agencies. You've agreed to that by participating and having intercourse with that particular entity. Those three entities, Equifax, TransUnion, and Experian, are part of basically indirectly and directly with the banking system. Okay? They're the people, the entities that gather that information to make the public aware of your consumer purchasing power or lack thereof. So I'm not telling you to run away from that information. What I'm saying is go in there, clean it up, make some money for the from the violators, and then use it responsibly. We're not saying don't ever use your personal credit information. You need to use it. But you also need to use corporate credit. You also need to keep certain things private. So I'm not – I don't run away from a credit report, all right? I love a credit report, okay, because I know how to utilize it, all right? I know how to utilize credit. I know how to get it. I know how to get rid of credit that's not erroneous credit information that's not supposed to be there and make money while doing it. So, you know, I'm not. We're not telling you to run away from that information. We want you to use that information responsibly. We want you to enter into obligations knowing what you're getting into and being able to tell the lender or the creditor or the service provider, no, I don't think I'm going to do that, and let me go ahead and sign this in this particular way. Let me go ahead and add that in that particular way. Let me go ahead and take that out because I don't agree with that. You know, start making the contract agreeable to you as opposed to just signing under their terms, which is all going to benefit them. So we just want to teach you more responsible ways because we haven't been responsible because we wasn't educated on how to get credit, how to keep credit, and how to deal with credit. This show, this network teaches you a multiplicity of ways to how to deal with credit and how to improve your economic stability and how to stop being oppressed by just the lack of knowledge. That's why we're oppressed. You know, I play both sides of the fence sometimes to remain fair. And many times when you deal with attorneys, and Latif would know that, and you deal with entities, you know, they're not as smart as you think. They're really not. And if we just open up the book and read, and it's fair game. They say, well, the law is right there. Did you ever read it? You know, the judge is going to sit there. He's going to be impartial. If you're going to let that attorney beat you up because you didn't open up a book, then you deserve to get beat up. I say that respectfully, but you deserve to get beat up because you can read the same book they read. Ignorance of the law is no defense. That judge is not there to advocate for you. He's there to make sure that, you know, you don't get hit with a sucker punch. Most times, okay, most times. But you need to know what he calls a sucker punch because you need to read the rules. So studying and being aware of how to protect yourself, your assets, your intellectual property is a process that we have to learn. But meanwhile, we've executed a whole lot of contracts without knowing how to perform within those contracts or what to do when the other party doesn't perform rightfully or breaches that contract. And that's what this forum is for.
Okay, one last question. I'm almost done. It's just kind of a repeat. I just wanted to see if yours was any different from what other people were talking about for intellectual property, and I thank you for that. Now, Latif had said something about recoupment and that name, and I think he said UCC something 305, but I don't know the number that came before 305.
Well, which state are you in, ma'am?
New Jersey / Pennsylvania.
This is what you do. You go under, wait a minute, New Jersey / Pennsylvania. If you were going to court of law, which state would it be? Pennsylvania, New Jersey,
it depends on what the issue is. It could be either one.
Right.
Okay.
She's right there on the line. See, Pennsylvania and New Jersey is really kind of,
yeah, I know.
It's kind of weird. You can go to Walmart and be in Pennsylvania and then go to the gas station and be in Jersey.
I understand. Well, here's the reason why I'm saying that.
Otherwise, I can have legal issues on both sides.
Okay, well, here's the thing. It doesn't matter. You got full faith and credit from state to state. But you either go into Pennsylvania Commercial Code or New Jersey Commercial Code, and you want to go to go under the commercial code, and then you're going to look for subsection 3-30. Hold on 1 second. Because in Georgia, it's I'll get it for you right soon.
Okay.
Okay. Let me get your Pennsylvania. Yeah, in Georgia, for example, it would be, for the people who are in the Georgia area, it would be Title 11, 3-305, 306, and 307. Those are the three codes that you want to look at. Okay? In New Jersey, UCC, each state has their commercial code.
Right.
Okay? It looks like it's, what? Code Title 13. Let me see. Title 13 in Pennsylvania. Okay. Let me see. Here it is. It's Title 13, Chapter 33, Subsection 3305. Okay? And it says defenses and claims in recoupment. Okay? And it says except as stated in above Section B, the right to enforce an obligation of a party to pay an instrument is subject to the following. And it says, one, a defense to the obligor based on the infancy of the obligor to the extent that it is a defense to a simple contract. So what you're saying here is that whatever contract's out there, you have the right to recoup it and claim it, because when it was issued, you were infant, and now you have come to reclaim it.
All right, sister, you got that. Appreciate your call.
Title 13, Chapter 33, Section 3305.
Yeah,
all right.
I have it.
Appreciate your call, sister. Thank you, Queen. All right. Let's go to the last caller here. I think we got like 9 minutes left. Let's go to, let's see, let's go to 330. That might be Ohio. 330-5677, your high frequency. Do you have a question right quick?
Yes, sir. How you doing? How y'all doing today?
I'm well. How are you?
Good. I got a question. I would like to learn more about trust laws, like putting cars and stuff into trust.
Sure. Just contact Brother Youssef at High Frequency Radio Blog Talk at gmail.com, or go into the archives. There are plenty of shows on trust. Okay? You have a plethora of shows on trust. But you could also contact Youssef at High Frequency Radio Blog Talk at gmail.com. He may be able to lead you to the specific shows that he has done on that topic and related guests that appeared discussing that topic.
Okay, one more question, sir.
Sure.
I was in a car accident. I was hit behind, and I was going through court cases. You know, I had to go to court. You know, I got hit from behind in an accident by a drunk driver, and we was in court, and how come they don't call you, talk to you, go over anything with you in your case or nothing?
How come who?
The lawyer.
Doesn't go over. Which lawyer?
Anything about the case? For me, my lawyer.
Your lawyer, or are you talking about the insurance company's lawyer? Which lawyer are you speaking of?
My lawyer.
Why doesn't he discuss anything about your case?
Yeah, I've never had one call from him. Just, from, yeah, nothing.
He's in an accident, so his attorney that took it on a contingency, and he's just like, look, shut up and sit down, enjoy the ride. I will take my 33%. I'll give you the rest, and just be quiet.
What he raises the valid questions. See, I've taught courses how to manage your attorneys. Okay, some people, attorneys are necessary evil. Okay?
Yeah, of course.
Because they don't have or have not learned the procedures, et cetera, et cetera. So the common question is, when you have an attorney, do you sit back and let them do everything? You got to be very careful, because an attorney can bind you over. I've seen cases where attorneys made agreement and told the person to sign here, and later on the person found out they did not want that course of action. And then the only action left was to sue the attorney for a breach of contract or a malpractice. So what you have to do in this, what the course should be to teach that, is you need to know enough about civil practices and what goes on in the court and how to, just as Brother Sharif said, how to see your records in the court system, if there's any progress, any documents or motions or things that have been entered, okay? And from time to time, pick up the phone and call the attorney and say, listen, I've been following the case. What's going on? Anything new? Any offers? Any, you know, where we stand? So do not be complacent to the point that out of sight means out of mind, but hold them to the fire because they're paid to, in the end, satisfy you. They're your servant. Very good question. And with
good,
the little
good,
practice, you know, you just treat them like they're a contractor to come cut your grass. You know, they cut the grass. You say, hey, wait a minute, you missed that spot. Or you didn't trim it right. You didn't do anything like that. Do the same thing with attorneys because actually they're your agent. You're the principal. And
that's
where?
Right. And one more thing. When we was in there going over the case, you know, in the hallway, there was a guy in there. I guess he was in there for foreclosure or something. And he walked right out of the court still talking about everything he has. He filed for his warehouse receipt or something. He's talking about a warehouse receipt. What is a warehouse receipt?
Yeah, that's a loaded question, brother. We'll have to get into that another time. I'm really on limited time.
Okay.
In fact, I only got like 4 minutes
right.
left in the show. So we'll call back next week, and we'll get into that. Appreciate your call. All right, we only have 5 minutes left. I just want to let everybody know again, we thank you for coming here today. Hopefully you've gotten some information that will aid you and help you in your plight with debt. I want to thank my illustrious guest, Brother Latif, for showing up again and adding a great deal of support to this network and this show and me personally. Also, the webinar will be this Saturday, 10 a.m., FCRA Part 2. Will be going on. You can email me to reserve your seats for that. We'll be back here, God's will, next Tuesday at 11 a.m. I'm sorry for the late start today. Somehow the time zones got conflicted on Block Talk and it had me scheduled for a different time. I'm going to try to take one more call. I got 4 minutes left. It has to be a quick call. This is going from New Jersey, I believe, 202-5140. Do you have a quick question? 5140, your line is open. All right, let's see if we can grab another quick one. We already answered that. It looked like we let's go to 774-2137. 774-2137, do you have a quick question? 2137, your line is open. All right. Let's try this one. 1111. 1111, your line is open. You're on high frequency radio. 1111, your line is open. Do you have a question? All right.
That's Uncle Sam there.
that's what I thought. All right, well, we're going to close out. Brother Latif, do you have any closing arguments for the show
no
here
argument,
today?
But I just want to thank you for being such a gracious host, and I've enjoyed it. Peace and blessing be to the audience out there, and peace and blessing be to Brother Yusuf, also who's doing a great job out there. And like you said, the common denominator is that we're trying to uplift and enlighten the people.
That's right, brother. I just want to say to the family and to the community out there, you know, we have a network where you can bring your family, your friends, and your relatives to learn something. We have a variety of topics that we discuss on this network. There's a lot of educational value to what we discuss, and we hope that you're out there letting the community know that your community actually has an educational system. Many communities don't have that. Many societies don't offer that. But we've put together a network here that you can come and get some understanding that you are not able to get anywhere else. We are dropping information and dropping jewels in street term that you will not be able to get anywhere else. It might not be totally complete, but it's enough to get you to the source of information so that you're able to utilize that information to free yourselves. My show is not dedicated to have you rely on me. It's dedicated solely for you to educate yourself and for you to be a Sharif or a Yusuf or a brother Latif. So we hope you continue to support us. God bless you. We'll see you next week. Good night. Good day. Enjoy yourself. Peace.
My lady is, my Mercedes is, my baby mama heart is.